Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 6th, 2018. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. And if you're listening over live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our access code is 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be in the Gospel of John. We're going to pick up where we left off. We're in chapter 4, Gospel of John, chapter 4. And we're going to read quite a bit, quite a few verses tonight, because I don't want to break the story up. So we'll see where it ends. Okay, so we're going to pick up chapter 4, Gospel of
John. Getting out and coming back, John.
I'm sorry?
On my set, you're cutting out and coming back.
Oh. Anybody else? Let's see. Well, let me go over to, could be you, but let's check this out in a minute. Let's go over to All right, star 6 to unmute yourself. Am I coming through out there to others? Star 6 to unmute yourself. Am I coming through okay? Testing 1, 2, 3. Star 6, to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I hear you fine now.
You're coming in fine.
I hear you fine. I've been hearing you
fine.
You're
fine.
Okay, so maybe it was on your side, Jan.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Could be, yeah.
Okay. We'll go back to Q&A. Okay. All right, so we're going to pick up in the Gospel of John, as I mentioned, chapter 4, and we'll see where we end. Again, it's going to be quite a few verses because I don't want to break the story up. Okay, when therefore the Lord knew how the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again into Galilee. And he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to a city of Samaria, which he called Sychar, near to the parcel of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now, Jan, you might have to mute yourself. Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied with his journey, sat thus on the well. And it was about the sixth hour. There cometh a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus saith unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away unto the city to buy meat. Then said the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that ye, being a Jew, asketh a drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, give me to drink, thou would have asked of him, and he would have given you the living water. The woman saith unto him, Sir, thou hast nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. From whence thou then hast thou the living water? Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well and drank thereof himself and the children and his cattle? Jesus had answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinketh of this water shall thirst again, but whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up unto everlasting life. The woman saith unto him, Sir, give me this water that I thirst not, neither come hither to draw. Jesus saith unto her, Go call thy husband, and come hither. The woman answered and saith unto him, I have no husband. Jesus said unto her, Thou hast well said, I have no husband, for thou hast had five husbands, and he whom thou now hast is not thy husband, in that thou sayest thou truly. The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet. Our fathers worshipped in this mountain, and ye say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, believe me, the hour cometh when ye shall neither in this mountain nor yet at Jerusalem worship the Father. Ye worship, ye know not what. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. But the hour cometh, and now is, when the true worshippers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For the Father seeketh such to worship him. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. The woman saith unto him, I know that Messiah cometh, which is called Christ. When he is come, he will tell us all things. Jesus answered and saith unto her, I that speak unto thee am he. And upon this came his disciples, and marveled that he talked with the woman. Yet no man said, What seekest thou? Or why talkest thou with her? The woman then left her water pot, and went her way into the city, and saith to the men, Come, see a man, which told me all things that ever I did. Is not this the Christ? Then they went out of the city, and came unto him. In the meanwhile, his disciples prayed him, saying, Master, eat. And he saith unto them, I have meat to eat that you know what not of. Therefore saith disciples one to another, hath any man brought him aught to eat? Jesus saith unto them, my meat is to do the will of him that sent me, and to finish his work. Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest? Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes, and look on the fields, for they are white already to harvest. And he that reapeth receiveth wages, and gathereth fruits unto eternal life, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. And herein is that saying true, one soweth and another reapeth. I sent you to reap that wherein whereon ye bestoweth no labor, what men labor, and ye are entered into their labors. And many of the Samaritans of that city believeth on him for the saying of the woman which testifieth, he told me all that ever I did. So when the Samaritans were come unto him, they besought him that he would tarry with them. And he abode there 2 days. And many more believed because of his own word. And saith unto the woman, now we believe not because of the saying, for we have heard him ourselves, and know that this is indeed the Christ, the Savior of the world. Okay, I'm going to stop there. That is chapter 4. We read through verse 1 all the way through 42. And we'll pick up next week on that. Okay. Again, we don't specifically have a topic. I don't know that I have anything really to bring up other than the fact that, we're still going forward with the sheriff's project. I have not sent out an email yet. I've been just so busy, and I want to write something up and get something out and update the front page to make, so that the page would really follow up, not only that we've received enough money to go forward with our court case, but we want to use the extra money, which is about $4,000, a little over that now, to use towards the sheriff's project. And so we're going to start pushing more towards the sheriff's project. We're going to ask people if they, anybody that can afford $50 or more, a one-time gift or donation to National Liberty Alliance for the sheriff's project. And the Sheriff's Project basically is that we wrote a book, for those who don't know, but I think most people do know, but for those who don't, we wrote a book, which we'd like to print out in a handbook, pocket handbook size booklet. It is available free online as a PDF. You can download it. It's on our front page, and it's called the Sheriff's Handbook. And we would like to get that in the hands of every sheriff across the nation. There's about 3,100 and change in sheriffs across the nation. Each one of those sheriffs have deputies. So our plan is to send at least 20 books to each sheriff, and so that they can hand them out to their deputies also. And of course, if they ask for more, we want to be able to give them more. That project's going to run us about $50,000. And again, we've collected a little over 4,000 now, and we want to keep pushing while we've got the momentum of monies coming in. And so we want to keep pushing and continue on that particular project. It's an extremely important project because we're getting ready to go out to take control of the judiciary, of the judicial process, shall I say. We're going to sue the judiciary. And with that, hopefully we will succeed, and I think we have a good chance of succeeding, especially with what Trump is doing. And again, we've been keeping in contact with President Trump with everything that we've been doing. We trust that he's been getting our paperwork. But we're going to send him a copy of this lawsuit. We're going to send it to him in the form of an information. And as a matter of fact, we're going to request that maybe him or someone in his administration answer the fact that he is getting these papers. And again, we've been sending him papers for, goodness, almost 2 years now. We started sending it to him maybe about 4 or 5 months, during his campaign when he was running for president. So a few months before he became president. And it was at his request. So, we'll send him a copy, and like I said, this one we're going to ask for a response, just the fact that he's getting it. We'll figure out how we'll word that. Meanwhile, I will be getting an email out to the breakdown of the cost of these booklets and the mailing. We kind of went through that last week a little bit, roughly speaking. You know, it's going to cost about $6 for each sheriff, and there's 3,000 plus sheriffs. So the mailing's going to be about $6. It's between $5.50 and $6.50, so we'll just say it's about $6. So you can do the math right there and see what it's going to cost to mail. The cost of the booklets, we're going to have to run off at least $100,000. This is twice at least, maybe even three times the number of pages that we had in our last booklet that we did, which is the Jurist Handbook. So it's going to be a lot more expensive. I know we came up with a rough idea number. I got to talk with the people that did our last one and see if I can get an accurate number on that. But again, between printing out the books and we're going to need to print out 100,000 of them at least. If we get a little more money than expected, we'll order more because I'm sure others would like to have a copy of that. Everybody should have a copy of that booklet, really, not just the sheriffs. It's a real good booklet. And again, people should read it, and you can see it up online and see once what you think. If anybody has any comments or ideas about it, it hasn't gone to print yet, obviously, so you can get that ideas and maybe something we need to add or some correction or something. You can get back to us either at questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. You can send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, or you can get it to Jan. And we'll take a look and see once what we think. So again, we really need to start getting people busy and going. We've got a campaign going to really also to re-energize the people that have joined up to National Liberty Alliance. We were coming up on 7,000 members now. I think we got coming up on 6,900, I think, members at this point coming up on. So we're about 100 away from 7,000, and we hope to hit that soon. But in any event, we need to wake up the membership that have fallen asleep. Every organization has people that fall asleep, but it's time to really try to wake them up. We do that with the welcoming committee, trying to entice the people to wake up and come take the courses, the free courses, get involved, maybe volunteer a little time, donate $5 a month or more. And we'll be asking them also to donate $50 or more for this sheriff's project. So again, that'll happen as soon as we get enough money to be able to order. Once we get enough money to order, we definitely will order and trust that we'll get the rest of the money to mail. But we'll see where we go. In fact, I'm looking at some notes I had made from last week, so I'll run some rough numbers, and we'll get this out in the email in specific so everybody knows what we're doing and what kind of cost factors are involved in this campaign for constitutional sheriffs. We've got we're thinking that they're going to cost, if we order 100,000, we're thinking they're going to cost about 35 cents each. So 35 cents times 100,000 is $35,000. So that's what it's going to cost us to order these booklets. And then we're looking at 3,100 sheriffs, 20 handbooks, the 20 ounces apiece. It's probably going to be more. Well, actually, maybe not. You know, the handbooks that we had for the jurist were 1 ounce each. This is going to be at least probably three times the number of pages. So you would think that it's 3 ounces apiece, but actually they got this new lightweight paper out. It's very strong. I guess it's sort of like the Bible pages, you know? And so we're probably looking at about 1 ounce each. So 20 ounces of mail in the media mail. But even if it's more than that, I forget what the limit is. I think we can go 30, maybe 35 ounces and still stay within the same price range. But anyway, we're figuring 20 ounces, 20 handbooks in each box, and we're figuring we'll use media mail, and we have down here $6.50 each, so we'll keep that a little high on that. So that's $20,150. So this is a total of $55,000 for this project to get it off the ground and get these booklets into the hands of all these sheriffs. Again, we need to educate the people. Take control of the political process, of the judicial process first, of course. And we need to train our sheriffs to be able to be constitutional sheriffs. We need to make the point clear to our sheriffs, and I think we do in the booklet, and if we haven't, I'll make sure we get this in there. We want to make it clear to the sheriffs that they've raised their hand to swear to protect and defend the Constitution, and the question is if they don't know the Constitution and they have to go talk to a bar attorney, then were they lying when they raised their hand? Because they swore to protect the Constitution. That lawyer didn't swear to protect the Constitution. This sheriff needs to understand and know themselves what the Constitution is. But, of course, they've got us convinced to think that we can't understand it. But the Constitution is a very thin book. Only a few pages in a pocket handbook, and it's very clear. The sheriff's handbook certainly is not moot, and we're going to make that point in court concerning the Constitution. But the Constitution certainly is not moot, and so anybody who really takes their time, reads through it, maybe they need a dictionary here or there. But they read through it. It's pretty clear, pretty simple. Unalienable rights is very clear, and we have more rights than that. We have rights to practice law. We have rights to earn a living, to do anything. We don't need a license to work or practice anything. Of course, maybe a doctor or something. Certain fields, of course, you would need a license. You make sure that you have proper education for those kind of things. But generally speaking, the right of access of court is an unalienable right. The right to justice is an unalienable right. So it's very simple. We don't have to get complex about this. They have what's called civil law. We're going to get in a lot of detail on this in our argument against the judiciary. They have what's called civil law. Civil law is statutory law. We're going to make that clear. We're going to show what civil law is clearly in this paperwork that we are going to file against the judiciary. But civil law is what they put upon us, and that's not the law of the land. The law of the land is the Constitution and common law. That's the law of the land. The Constitution, that law ultimately is to govern our government. Common law is to govern our courts. It's to be courts of justice. Whether we're going into equity, which is generally speaking a disagreement between two individuals, generally speaking contract, but that's called an equity court where we permit the judge to make a ruling in that case. That's called an equity court. And if we don't agree with the ruling, we have appeal processes. Each state, you have at least two appeal processes. So that's the law of the land, and that's the court process. Now, if the court case is valued more than $20, which should be, an ounce of gold, but an ounce of gold these days is goodness what. I don't even know what it's going these days, $14, $15, maybe more, $100. But anyway, $20. When it was written, it was intended to be about $1,500 or $1,600, whatever the value of gold is now. But in any event, it's $20. So anything over $20, you have the unalienable right of a trial by jury to decide and require, any one of the two can require a trial by jury. And then you get tried by jury. As far as criminal cases, there should be no differences between civil and criminal. It's a court of justice, period. And in that court, it's either hearing under, equity or under law. And law could be also contract law as well as it would be in a criminal case. But the penal code is not the law of the land. There is law that is lawful, that is part of the law of the land, because we've given Congress power to write law under certain circumstances. Okay, so certain cases, there are statutes, and to become a lawyer, if you want to specialize in something, maybe commercial law, you could be specializing also in maritime law. Let's see, let me just open my constitution here. There's a few things maybe we can make a note of. I'm in the amendments, wrong place. There should be an Article 3, I think Section 2. Article 3, Section 2. Yeah, judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, laws of the United States, the treaties made, or which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministries, consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime. So there's admiralty law, maritime law, and the jurisdictions thereof. If we go into the powers we gave Congress in Article 1, we also read concerning bankruptcies. So there's bankruptcy law that Congress has the power and the authority to write law concerning, and people might specialize in that particular, law where they represent people and assist people in that in those cases. Counterfeiting, they're to provide for the punishment of counsel of counterfeiting, and so there would be law involved with that also, the writing of that law, and also to become a citizen and so on. So there is quite a bit of law that is lawful, that Congress has been given the power and the authority to write law for those cases. But never, ever, ever have we, the people, given Congress the power or the authority to write law concerning, our behavior. So if there is a crime that took place, Congress does not have the authority or the power to write what the requirement might be for an individual who committed a certain kind of a crime. That's a decision of the jury. The jury is to take, take note of the case and at the end of the day make a decision on what the punishment might be. And the punishment must fit the crime ultimately, but it also must serve the injured party. So really, restitution should be in view. There are cases where people need to go to jail, of course, and that, I think that would be very far and in between. Maybe the death penalty might be something that they may require. But generally speaking, it's restitution. That's required. And again, jail would be the least thing, the furthest from their minds. If someone were concerned about that, maybe has a record of running and maybe might run, and so maybe, we can put an electronic device on them and, maintain control over where they're at and make sure they don't take off. So that's a much better way to deal with that person than to put people in jail. We don't need to be putting people in jail. These are the things we must think about and talk about once we get into power and authority. Going back to the Constitution in itself, it's a very thin book. It's a pocket handbook. I know this little pocket handbook has 46 pages. But it has the Declaration of Independence, it has the Constitution, it has the Bill of Rights, it's got the other amendments, it's got a lot of quotes, Founding Father quotes, it's got an index, so it's not a lot. That's the Law of the Land, right here in my hand, that little booklet. Now, of course, again, you know, the Law of the Heart, which is ultimately common law. And again, people can figure out when someone's guilty or not. People can figure out how to fix the problem. After all, you know, we have their peers that are going to judge them. And 12 people coming together can figure it out. We don't need the government to tell us what to do. We have not given them the authority to tell us what to do. So we're going to make all this very clear in our court case. And as we go about writing this court case, maybe we'll read parts of it over, you know, on a Monday night, read pieces of it as we go forward with it. We'll see. Well, maybe we'll wait till we file it and then start reading pieces of it. So we'll see where we go with that. All right, but anyway, this sheriff's project is an extremely important project. We must educate our sheriffs. We must educate our children. We must, get control of the schools, and the parents on the local level need to decide the education and what kind of an education they want their children to have. But part of that education, along with the basics, must be civics, the Constitution, and law. You know, well, the Constitution ultimately is law, and we can talk about common law and court process and teach our children how they can access courts. And again, these are not difficult things. We need to teach ourselves that. The two courses, the free courses we have at nationallibertyalliance.org, those two free courses is a beginning step for that purpose. The course that we're trying to put together, and again, you know, we've got so many things on our plate, we're way behind on that course, but with what we're doing with the court case and writing a book at the same time, it all works together with the course, because all that information would be pretty much part of it, or all three of those processes. You know, the court case, the book, and the course. And in those two, particularly the book, I think we'll be able to say that. Easily, you should have all the knowledge, everything you really need in order to get into a court and make a case. And a lot of it will probably be in the court, in the course also. I think you'll have enough in the course also for the same thing, but it will be more in-depth into the book, and the book can be more like a reference book that people could use to help write cases, go through the process, and so on. But we need to know these things. We need to learn these things. We need to teach our children these things. If we fail to do so, then we will not have consent over our government. And if we do not have consent over our government, the deep state will rise its ugly head again. You know, we have a lot of confidence that President Trump is going to accomplish his goal. And when that happens, then we, the people, need to take control. And if we don't, then shame on us. We don't deserve liberty. And people really can't know what liberty is until they study liberty, until they study the common law, until they study the Constitution. You cannot know what liberty is. You cannot know. People think they know. I thought I knew until I started studying. I didn't have a clue on what liberty really is. And then the responsibility of liberty. You know, we have a responsibility to make sure that we do consent to our government and pass that to our children and make sure they understand that is their duty also, to take control of their government. And President Trump agrees with that. He's quoted twice that we the people are sovereign, and we'll be quoting that in our court case also. Okay, let's see where we go from here. So, campaign for constitutional sheriffs. I'm going to get an email together. As a matter of fact, I'm going to try to make it my business to get this out tomorrow. I knew I got some things to do, but I should be able to get out tomorrow and start pushing our membership towards this on a harder drive, and get out there begging for money again. And again, everybody should be given $5 a month or more. But also everybody should do what they can to try to give $50 or more for this particular drive. And, you know, but even if you can only afford extra $5 for this, that's fine, too. You know, but, and some people can afford $100 or even $1,000. You know, we did have someone that gave us $5,000 that took us right up, and, you know, that's why we're moved now over to our sheriff's project, and to try to push others who maybe have a little bit of a deep pocket out there that can put their money in a place that's going to help restore their liberty, help restore their ability to consent to government, both on the political and the judicial realms. So people need to understand that. And we have a lot of information on our website that explains how that consent works. But it also will be explained in our book and in our course. And people can ask questions here on Monday night, on our Monday night program. We can give more detail and explain a little further. Okay, let's see. Jen, do we have any announcements?
I have no announcements. I do have several questions.
Okay.
Okay, this person has gotten in trouble with the IRS. He was allowing them to withhold money but not filing 1040s for a number of years, and then recently quit allowing them to take any money at all. So they sent him a phone or gave him a telephone call that said he needs to take care of it within so many hours or they are going to create merry havoc with him. So his questions are, first, could you kindly recommend a course of action? Would perhaps the best solution be for me to call a meeting with their local office and show them my status in the tax code, either by residence outside of the U.S. or as an CAP N, CAP R, CAP A, CAP I? If successful, could this reclassify me so that I am not further harassed, or do you have another recommendation?
Well, I can assure you that those things will not work. They'll classify you as a sovereign citizen and treat you as such as they, you know, interpret it, which is a cop killer. Yeah, look, making the argument on those things don't work. You have to come at them from a different perspective. And in order to do that, you really need to understand how the court system works. You have to understand the rules of the court. You have to understand that you're in a civil court and that you're pleading constitutional issues, so it becomes a problem there. If you can get them into the court, that's a good thing. They're going to take 60 days. If I were you, I would sue all these individuals involved. But don't forget to sue the clerk, county clerk, sue the sheriff. Of course you're going to let them go. But you need to sue them too, because they're gonna come and seize your accounts. If you're gonna fight this, maybe the easiest way for right now is to pay the taxes. I hate to say that, but for most people that is the case. That might be the easiest and the best thing to do, because unless you have the knowledge and the ability to fight these things in court, I come to the understanding, from what I can understand now concerning what Trump is doing, that he's going to take the bank down. First off, if you see him in his office, he's got a big picture of Jackson right to, I think, his left or right or whatever, but right around, right by his desk, big picture of Jackson. I think that tells us a lot. He's had Jackson in a few places, so Jackson, of course, President Jackson was the one who killed the bank, and it remained dead for quite some time until it rose back up in the early 20th century. But it's a difficult path. You have to, first of all, get into the court. You got to sue them. You must, if you're not going to pay it, if you're not going to work arrangements out with them to pay it, okay? Let me go back to what I was saying about Trump first. Trump, I believe, from all that I can see in here, he's going to take the bank down. He's going to continue income tax, or if you want to call it that, but not on individuals, I don't believe. I think he's going to take it back to where it belongs, commercial. corporate taxes, commercial taxes. That's where the income tax belongs, and if you want to call it income tax. And I guess you could call it that, but well, our earnings is not income. And I would say if you're going to fight them, you need to, again, like I said, you need to understand the rules of the court. You need to understand the process and the procedures of the court. You need to be able to write good papers. You need to stay focused on certain points. Read your papers. You know, I'll tell you what, this is unbelievable. People just never read. Lawyers never read either. If you read the papers and everything they serve you, they'll give you their authorities that they act upon. They figure nobody reads them, and I think nobody does read them, to be honest, because I read them, and I couldn't believe what I read. And that's where I made my battle. I made my battle in their words. It does not talk about me. It doesn't qualify me as being participant. I'm more than happy, if you can show me that I'm a taxpayer, I'm more than happy to pay tax. We all pay legal tax. We pay taxes, you know, sales tax and different taxes, and that is lawful. And if they have some kind of a lawful tax that we need to be paying, well, by all means, we should be paying. You know, that's the attitude you got to take. But then you got to show them using their law, their words, you know, to show them that this doesn't apply to you. One of the big problems is that if you've been complying over the years by filing papers, they try to come out after you saying, well, you agreed. If you sue them, what it does is it will give you more time. They'll take 60 days to answer. They'll try to throw you out of the court. And it doesn't matter if they throw you out of the court for, you know, one reason or another under Rule 12. But you should read our cases concerning Rule 12, especially our New York case and the gun law. That will give you some insight on what they're doing with Rule 12. And we're also going, in our new case coming up, we're going to be addressing Rule 12. We're going to be addressing a lot of rules. I'm good with the rules of the court in a lot of cases. Even though it's called the rules of civil procedure, some of those things are good for common law. I have no argument with them. We should have rules. Rules are something that don't have to be applied, you know, but we should all work within rules so that we're all on the same page, and that's why rules are there. So the rules are good. There's a lot of rules that are repugnant to the Constitution inside that rules of the court. And again, that takes a study to really come to. And I'm working on that now, and we're going to explain that in the court case, I think in pretty in-depth. I don't know how much time we'll spend in that, but we're going to spend a lot of time on the rules of the court, I think. But again, they think that they can create what's called an Article I court. There's no such thing as an Article I court. We're going to show that also in our court case, that there is no such thing as an Article I court. Congress never saw anything as an Article I court, and even the Supreme Court talks as if there is no such thing as an Article I court. But the rules of the court brings us into a civil court, and if you go up onto their website, even the United States Supreme Court website, you will see that there is, they claim such a thing as an Article I court. Now, I've been reading some stuff on this Article I court recently because this is going to be going into the court case. And an Article I court, one of the justices of the United States Supreme Court years ago made the point that, you know, anything that would be an Article I court, if they want to call it that, where Congress has the power or the authority to write or to, how does it put, I forget the words. I'll use the word ordain, but a vest. I think, no, that's not it either. I'll use the word ordain, but it's not the right word. Congress has the power, let's say, to ordain the tribunals, okay? So they can create. Maybe that was the word that was used. I'll look it up when I get a chance, and I'll make a note of that. You know, I'll mention it when I find it. But it is in Article... So it's in Article 1, Isn't it Section 8? I'm pretty sure it is, where the authority is given to the Congress, which talks about the tribunals. So they can create the tribunals, but you have to marry that over with Article 3, where and the jurisdiction, and the only jurisdiction that is given to the courts. And so when you bring those two together, you can see that there is no such thing as an Article 1 court. An Article 1 court is an administrative court. The United States Supreme Court has one, like I said, one judge talked about this and said it was an administrative court and a court that is to be used outside of the United States, in other words, in the territories. I disagree with that complete conclusion. I don't think that that's even proper either, but that could be a debatable subject. You know, maybe we need to go back with this issue. As a matter of fact, we do need to go back with this issue to the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers and see once, as Jefferson says, go back to the time when the discussions took place and the arguments took place and the discussions and the conclusions took place to know exactly what the meaning of the Constitution is if you have a problem with it. But in most cases, it's plain language, as Jefferson said. And so our Constitution is plain language. But as far as the power given, okay, let's go into Article 3, Section 1. And again, you know, you can go back and re-listen to this program, you know, download the MP3, because I'm giving you a lot of information on this particular situation. But you can go back and, you know, download the MP3 and rewind it and pause it and take notes and so on. But if you go into Article 3, Section 1, it says the judicial powers of the United States shall be vested in what? One Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. This is clearly, we're talking about the Federal District Courts, which is underneath the Supreme Court. Now, there is a discussion out there that I've been, someone shared a paper with me, I forget exactly, but it's about the judiciary and the discussions concerning, you know, how they brought things together and how the Constitution gave them the authority to do this and to that, do that. And there was a wondering about the appellate process and a lot of good stuff. But I agree that the appellate process is a good process, of course, because the United States Supreme Court can't hear all the cases in the federal district courts. So they do need assistance, so lower appellate courts, to deal with the problems. Even though there doesn't seem to be really an authority to create an appellate court, okay? But you can take the interpretation and logic and need and conclude appellate courts are good, which is the courts between the actual, you know, court where, you know, of where the argument takes place. Okay, and then, of course, the United States Supreme Court. So there's an appellate court in between. But let's go back here. Vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their office during good behavior. And it goes on to talk about being paid and so on. In Section 2, it says, here's the judicial powers. They cannot go outside these judicial powers. And this is extremely important. Now, of course, they're also given power in Congress to write laws for the powers of Congress. We the people gave them that power. And so, therefore, you know, those laws would require specialty, you know, types of laws. Again, like we said, maybe bankruptcy laws. And different laws for different things, laws on becoming a citizen, you know, and so on. So that authority is given over there, but no authority is given for what's called an Article I court that I can see anywhere in the Constitution. And but all your IRS courts are Article I courts, and they are held. They rent the room is what they do. They rent the room in the federal courts. And then they rent the judges, so everything looks real, you know. But they're Article I courts, but it's a difficult battle to make this point and argue this case. So I wouldn't suggest anyone trying to argue that case. We're going to be arguing that case, but we're not under pressure by anything going on. But we're going to argue that case in the case against the judiciary because that's one of the problems. that we have is these Article 1 courts. But anyway, the judicial power shall extend in all cases of law and equity. So it's got to fall under law or equity. And equity falls under, and law is common law. You know, it takes us right back to natural law. Equity falls under common law, and the final ruling or appeal or appellate process ends with the United States Supreme Court. That's the final word to the judges, okay, to the equity courts, not the law courts. They have no control, power, authority in the law courts. That's controlled by the people. You get a jury of your peers. A judge plays no role in it. Of course, they do, but they shouldn't. All those court cases really are a problem where the judges stuck their noses in. But in the on the other side, on the equity side of things, where you have one judge making a decision, you're not happy, you appeal it, and you go up the appellate process, and then maybe your case, possibly, and it's rare, but in some cases, of course, do get answered by the United States Supreme Court and their final words. And their decisions end up into what's called American jurisprudence, as long as it, you know, musters against the, the law of the land, or shall I say, the law of the land, ultimately. As long as it's not repugnant to the Constitution, it falls into American jurisprudence. Now, American jurisprudence is what the judges must use. When the Supreme Court makes a statement and makes things clear, and when they have a case, they have to abide by the rules or the decisions made and laid out by the United States Supreme Court. And again, it's written up over years of bringing together what's called American jurisprudence. So American jurisprudence, and again, it's guided by the common law also, not the rules of chancery. It's the rules ultimately of common law, American jurisprudence. But let's go back to this. Judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made under their authority to all cases affecting ambassadors and so on and so forth. It talks about cases between citizens of one state to another and so on. Some of that's been changed. I don't know that it should have been, but it has been changed. But going back over here now, where they get this authority or claim to get this authority, as I mentioned earlier, it does go back into Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution. And it is here, let's see, declare war. Okay, right here. It's number Section 8, Clause 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Clause 9. And here's the power and authority given to Congress to constitute, that's the word given, to constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. So any court that is not inferior to the Supreme Court is no court at all. Article 1 courts are administrative courts, and they are not subject to the United States Supreme Court. And that's the problem. That's not lawful. That's a problem, and that's what we're up against. Now, I do believe that President Trump is going to make things right, and I do believe he's going to succeed. He's going to take down the Federal Reserve. There's a lot of talk out there and coming out that this is what's going to happen, and ultimately, there's been those seizures already of gold to return back to the United States that have been robbed by us from us, and I don't want to get into those details. I may give a little bit of wrong information because I haven't really looked deep into it. You know, I only had one or two sources that I got this information as far as the gold. But in any event, I hear a lot of gold is returning back. He's going to bring down the Federal Reserve and then move the proper law that they may call on income back to its proper place, which really is commercial. And so if you can sort of keep things slowed down in order to get past that point, where all this business will be taken care of. And I think in the next 9 months to the year, for sure, it'll be done. And then we'll be in safe grounds and be able to deal with these courts and argue. And hopefully at that point, we will be in authority and consenting to the judicial process as we should be doing so. But how you do that again is, again, write a court case, get it in the court, keep it in the real true courts, or Article III courts, use the process of the civil process, pay the $400. You might want to try to argue to get it back, but don't make a big deal about that. You really want to win the case if you can. You'll probably be thrown out in Rule 12. It'll take them at least 60 days to do that. They might even ask for more time. They might ask you for more time. You say, yeah, sure, take as much time as you want. So maybe it'll be 3 or 4 months. Okay? Then once they finally throw you out, because they will throw you out, unless you're really good, and even then they'll probably throw you out. But once they throw you out, then you appeal it. You have 30 days to appeal. Wait 20 days, then appeal it, and make sure you certify the, you know, your papers going in, you get a certified letter, get a return slip from the clerk. Maybe even serve it by sheriff. Have the sheriff serve it. So you absolutely shown you on a certain date you're in time. Now you have, once you file your appeal, you have 90 days to perfect it. So you can buy yourself a year, and I think in a year you'll be safe. But again, if you run through the appeal, you might win the appeal. I don't know how screwed up they are up on the appellate side of things, but if you can win the appeal, you're back into the court and you can argue your case. But make your case on numerous things. Due process, that's a key point. They have no, in your case, because you've been writing papers, you know, and filing papers, you know, maybe they can get you for, you know, the proof of that you owe that. And also fiduciary authority. So you've given them the fiduciary authority by signing those papers. So that could be a problem. But there's a big but here. If you read through their papers very clearly, they talk about a lot of strange things in the law. And they'll say that they have power under this law, they have power under that law, they can do this under that law, and this under that law. Go read those laws, and you'll find it has nothing to do with you. And you make your case on those, on that point. It becomes a logical argument. And so, again, if you can write papers and you can read through their junk and not fall asleep, but again, they're very specific on where their power and authorities are in their law, but they figure no one will look at it. They don't. The lawyers don't look at it. Okay? All the people I've seen battling these cases never look at it. That's where you want to make your argument. That's kind of the best I can do right now, and over time I'm sure you'll get a lot more information, because especially as we get things going again in the case that we're writing, you'll get information there. You'll also, if we get the book out, you get information there. If we get the course out, you'll get information there. You bring it all together and you should have plenty of ammunition to be able to make this war, or fight this war against these people. Anyway, what else you got, Jan?
In the absence of something like a reclassification of tax status at this point, jeopardize my Social Security. We are approximately age 62 and have put into the system all our lives if they were to invoke outrageous penalties.
I didn't get that. Try that again.
Well, he's worried about if they file against him and he loses, is he going to lose his Social Security, because he's quit paying taxes.
No, no, that's nothing. No, not at all. No. They're not going to take you, rob your Social Security. If you've been paying into it, they'll have to, you know, give you what to do. Even if you haven't been paying into it, they'll give you the minimum. So, but absolutely no, that will not affect your Social Security.
Well, I think you know. Yeah.
They may try to steal a piece of it, but it'll be a percentage, and I forget what it is, but they can only take so much out of your Social Security. It might be 10% or something like that.
He was talking about reclassifying himself out of the country in the first question. So maybe
not going to help you unless you leave the country. It's not going to help you. I'm telling you right now, that is the wrong path to go. They're going to beat you up. They're going to go after you as a sovereign citizen. They're going to drag you into their courts, and they're going to put you in jail.
Okay.
That's what's going to, look, I'm telling people, that's what's going to happen to anybody who makes that battle. I don't care who's telling you anything on any of these websites out there. Look, when I first started looking at these things, the first place I went to is start to go to all these websites that had all this information. I learned about the sovereign citizen thing, you know. I learned, it wasn't called a sovereign citizen, but being sovereign. I learned about the man on the land stuff and to, you know, how to take yourself out of the system and making a declaration and filing it with the clerk and going through all this stuff. And when you go into the court, you go in a certain way, you say certain words. Certain magic words, you click your heels, and you think you're going to be taken back to home to the home of justice. Forget about it. They're laughing at you. It's not going to happen. It's a con job. These people are either deceived, and I think that mostly they're deceived, but in some cases the enemy has been planting this stuff, I think, in my opinion. And again, they're laughing at you. You're going to end up in jail.
Okay. Most of us have heard of the heroism of Carl Miller. His videos give many techniques about responding in court by citing Supreme Court and appellate court cases. Would these arguments be successful today in most administrative courts and tax courts?
I am not aware of him citing a lot of these appellate cases, but he does stick very strongly on to the Supreme Court cases, United States Supreme Court cases. American jurisprudence is his key points that he uses in order to make his arguments, and that worked great 15, 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, but today it's not even working anymore. Believe me, we've used it and tried it, and they don't care. They don't care. They're just rogues. They're out of control. They don't care. They're not worried about nothing anymore. And they just do what they please. We got to put the fear of the people back into these people. And again, I think it's coming down the road. I think what we're doing and some other people are doing and what President Trump is doing, if we can educate the sheriffs, that would be a great thing. Combine that all together, and they're starting to get nervous. And maybe we'll start to get justice. It's a problem. Reread that question so I can make sure maybe there was something else I want to add to that.
Okay, most of us have heard of the heroism of Carl Miller. His videos give many techniques about responding in court.
Yeah, let's go back. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
You want me to continue?
No, I got it all now.
Okay.
Look, this is extremely important. Carl Miller's stuff could be used. You should try it. It is what we use it. We use the same thing. We use American jurisprudence. We use the United States Supreme Court cases. They ignore it. You might wake up a judge. You might get a judge that's a little nervous, and you'll win your case, or they'll push the other side to get this case out of my court, and they'll settle with you. And if there's someone, the other side's going to settle with you, take it and get out of there. Okay? But the Carl Miller stuff, again, we use it, the same things we use, and it's tough. It's not like it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's just got that bad. So, all right, any other questions?
I have heard that it is possible to request the IRS to complete one's 1040. But when they will not sign under penalty of perjury, you should reject.
It broke up a little. Try that again. Read that again.
Okay. I have heard that it is possible to request the IRS to complete one's 1040, but when they will not sign under penalty of perjury, you should reject it. Any comment?
Well, look, here's the thing. When the IRS goes to take a look at your taxes and figure it out for you, and I know because they did this to me, they'll see $220,000, let's say, in your account that has gone through your account. And they'll look at that and say, that's what you owe us in tax. you know, as a builder, you know, that kind of money would have went towards the construction, reconstruction of a fire damaged home. So there's lots of bills to pay, you know, and profit margins isn't that great. 10%, 15%, and if you're on a really lucky day, you may be 20%, but that's rare. So, you know, that profit margin isn't there that you actually would have owed on the tax on that kind of a thing, $220,000, let's say. But they will take, if they did your taxes for you, they'll look at your bank accounts and they'll say, this is all tax. Whatever's in your bank, that's what you owe us in tax. And what they're doing is they're trying to pressure you, okay, to sit down with them and go through them and get the real tax. And if you don't, they're going to chase you for that amount, okay? One of the things, two things you could do, proof of claim and fiduciary authority. I haven't seen any proof of claim. I haven't seen fiduciary authority. That's, what is that, Form 56 and Form 4490. You can run it in Google. You'll find it. And that's what I, when I went into court, I waved that in the court to the judge saying I didn't see those things. But in any event, you have to make your argument there. But you got to be in court on your own terms. If you're in an Article I court, you're not getting anywhere. You're not getting anything. The judge will tell you the Constitution is not in this court. Don't bring it up. If you try to, this is what he'll tell you. You're going to lose in that court. You cannot win in that court. You might as well just roll over and give them everything they want and comply. If you get into that court, you just got to comply. There's no other way to get out of there. And if they've gotten that far, they're really coming at you hard. So you got to beat them to the punch by being, the plaintiff in an Article III court, making it clear you're in a court of record, Article III court, so on and so forth, and push it that way. And again, it's an uphill battle, and unless you're really good and lucky, you're not going to win even there. There are certain circumstances you can. You got to first get past Rule 12, and that's a big, big problem. Big, big problem. Everybody gets thrown out for Rule 12, under Rule 12. Everybody. But if you can get past that, you have a chance of winning. And it's a matter of the judge, you know, how much he's going to stay status quo and don't care and think that he's still protected. If he realizes he's no longer protected anymore, you know, he's going to be a lot shyer now, and you're going to get more leverage in the court, and a smart judge will pull the other side over and say, go fix this, make a deal with these people, get this out of my court. But if you get a really bold judge that decides to go for the hilt, maintain that status quo at all costs, thinking he's still under the protection, that's a whole different problem. But again, it's an uphill battle. You're dealing with the IRS. So if you've been filling papers out and you don't have the ability to, if you don't have the knowledge of the court system, the knowledge of the rules, a little bit of experience, maybe a lot of experience, but at least a little bit of experience, the ability to write your own good papers, and to understand the game, what these people are doing, and the laws that they're using, and how you can turn those laws against them. If you don't have those skills, you're going to have a big, big problem. You might better off deal with them and let them rob you. You know, they got a gun to you. Look, I've been robbed. I had a knife in my belly when I lived in the Bronx, and you can have my money, you can have my wallet, you can have anything you want. Take it, you know? And that's where you're at, so think about it. You know, it's a horrible situation, but again, you know. Okay, what else we got?
Okay. In order to reverse a trespass, if we have to sue, is a simple common law suit recommended? If so, can it be filed in a county or state court? Should the wrongdoer be a man, or is it the IRS sufficient?
Well, if you're talking about the IRS trespassing, is that what they're talking about? Is this the same person?
Apparently, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. I would not go there. You're going to lose on those. You're right. a lot of this man on the land stuff is right. All this craziness that they do and stuff, to some degree, it's right, okay? But, you know, and then you get to the end, you click your heels, and you think you're going to be brought back home. It's not going to happen. Not anymore, anyway. You know, look, these things have been going on in the courts for a long time, and people have got this strategy and that strategy. And I'll tell you the truth, there's a lot of people out there that just, in my opinion, just full of a lot of BS, that's my opinion, telling you how good they're doing in the courts and how they won this and won that and so on and so forth. You know, getting thrown out of court, that's a win. We've had those wins, okay? You know, I hear these stories, I've read these stories, I don't believe them. Maybe years ago they worked, but they don't work no more. Once something works in a court, they do the tighten up to figure out, okay, what we're going to do with the next guy that comes in with this. And eventually they work a new strategy that they feel confident in, and they apply it, you know? So that's what, you know, goes on. And I would be very, very careful going in there with trespassing, using that kind of a, ploy to argue or deal with them. Again, all of this stuff that I'm hearing, you're learning from the wrong place. If it worked before in the beginning, it worked for a very short time. It doesn't work anymore. They're going to come at you with everything, and they'll have no mercy upon you. So you better be careful. At least if you stay, if you argue in the court, stay within the rules. Don't use the man on the land stuff. Use the law. Use their law. And you can beat them on their law, because it doesn't apply to you. You can lay it out and show it out, but you got to be in the right court. If you're going into an article for article, what they claim is an Article 1 court. If you go into the IRS court, they're not going to allow you to make these arguments. You're not going to bring these arguments up. The judge will forbid you. He'll find you in contempt. He'll let you. All right, I'm back. So I got kicked off.
Yep, so am I.
Can you hear me? You got kicked off too?
Yep, I can. Yeah, I got kicked off too.
All right. Okay, well, anyway, I'm back. Don't make those arguments. Again, we've done those arguments. We thought that that was the way to go. And you know what? It really isn't. The way to go is to deal with it what it is. It's a fraud to begin with, okay? There's certain things they're not going to bring up. They're not going to say, oh, you got a Social Security number. Ah, you got a birth certificate. They're not going to bring those things up. So don't worry about that. You don't have to, you know, go and make some claims that you don't have them anymore or anything like that, and that you're a certain kind of an individual. Forget about it. And again, it's not going to work. And again, we've learned that way, and again, the whole thing's fraudulent. There was a site out there, and I forget the name of it. I don't even know if they're still around, but it was a huge site with a huge amount of information. And they told you, unless you're really studying this stuff, we won't help you. And then, of course, they're going to charge you money to help you, too. But then you go through it just goes on. It's like reading the law of the enemy to begin with, and you got to read through all this stuff, and then you have to know all this stuff. It's insane. Just go to the simplicity of things. Stick with the simplicity. You know, due process in a court of law under Article 3, court of record, use their laws, show them how they don't apply to you. And I'm not talking, you know, you can even use inside U.S. 26, there is a statute in there that says that that U.S. 26 isn't law. So you can't even be held by it. You can bring that up if you want. It's their statute. But You know, use their statutes. You'll find they don't apply to you. For instance, I'm not a farmer that has, that stores large amounts of gasoline and has certain. I'm not. These are the people they're going at. This is what you'll read in USC 26. So read through their laws very carefully and follow it, because they bury things. You know, they'll refer to this as classified under that, interpreted by this, and understood under that. And then you go right down the line and follow the law, that little track that they give you, those breadcrumbs going down, and then you open up and say, wait, I'm not that person. You know, you get to the clause that really brings whoever is into the jurisdiction, or whatever the point is, and you find out it doesn't apply to you. So just reverse it right back and lay it out. It has nothing to do with you. Show the court how. And again, you have to be in a court of law, which is a court of record, which is an Article III court, and you want a jury. Of course, you're going to have another big argument. They're going to say jury can't decide the law. You know, the judge has got to decide the law. So it's another problem. Anyway, you got to be careful. You don't want to go to jail. At all costs, stay out of jail. You know? People say to me, why do I have a driver's license? Bottom line, really, so in case I decide to drive a commercial vehicle, ultimately, that's really my real answer. And, you know, but if a cop asks, a police officer asks me for he wants to see my ID, here it is. I don't care. I'm not going to argue the point. And so on. But bottom line, I have a driver's license because I don't want to go to jail, and I need to drive. Some people may be willing to go to jail. That's where their battle is, and that's their purpose, and that's what they're doing to make their point and mark, and that's fine. That's not me. I don't want to go to jail. So I'll do everything I can to stay out, and so should you, because you can't fight in jail. So anything else?
Yes, you said last week you had proof that the tax amendment was never ratified. Are you able to share, and could it be used by a man in advantage in one of their administrative courts?
We will be laying that out. It's a lot of information. I could talk somewhat about it. I can talk about it constitutionally. I can show the ratification. Ultimately, that's quite a bit, but we're going to be putting that information into the court case to show that 16 and 17 was never ratified. There is a book out there. Let me take a look to see the name of the book. I forget the name of the book. I know I have it here in my little library. Maybe put on sideways. Okay, there is a book out there, and it's a two-volume part book. Gerard, do you remember the guy, name of the guy who wrote that book on the 16th and the 17th Amendment? Gerard, are you here? Look like I saw him in the room here. All right, I'm not seeing the book offhand right now. I got a bunch of books that it's on its side. It's going to take me a little while. But we will have that information in the court case against the judiciary, laying that out, showing the yeas and the nays, both in the congressional record and in some state records where it was said that a state was a yay and it was nay, or where the state didn't even take the vote, didn't even participate. Okay, so we will lay that out in the case. I don't have it now. But as far as the Constitution is concerned, okay, the key point to this in this case is in Article 5 of the Constitution, where it says, and this is key, and this is the balance of power. You can take this back to the Federation, the Federalist Papers, and the Anti-Federalist Papers. You read in there, and you can see the argument and the debates concerning this. And this was a very, very important thing. This is part of the balance of power, okay? Right now, no state is sovereign. Right now, no state has any say of anything the federal government does. Federal government has carte blanche, does what it wants, and the states have no say in Congress whatsoever. And yet it says here in Article 5, it says that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. And equal suffrage, suffrage means vote, ultimately. So it must have an equal vote. Every state was given two senators. It had nothing to do with the population or anything. It had to do with each state having power and authority in Congress, in the Senate. So the people have the Congress, okay? We have a congressman, and that's where laws come up from the Congress, okay? And some laws do come up from the Senate also, but most comes up, most of the bills come up from the Congress. And then once Congress approves it, well, now the states have to decide whether they're going to approve it or not. They decide not to approve it, well, hey, it ain't going through. They have their equal suffrages. They have their say. They're sovereign states, okay? They're no longer sovereign. They no longer have a say, and they violated the heart of the Constitution, the liberty, the sovereignty of a state to begin with. Okay. Now there is also in Article 1, it talks about the Senate and how it's chosen and so on and so forth. You know, ultimately it's up to the states how they choose their Senate, but I think generally all the states pretty much the same way back when, before the 17th Amendment. But generally it was the governor generally would choose an individual to be a senator, and they have two houses, and both houses had to agree. And that's how it would go. I'm thinking, and I don't really know how this works, and I think it's up to the states how they want to do it. You know, maybe one house would choose one senator and the other house the other senator. That may be the way it went also. But the bottom line is that the legislators of the states decided on who the senators were going to be. And the senators had the power to recall at any given time. If they put a senator out there in Washington to represent the will of the Senate of the the state Congress, and they didn't do the will of the state, they can recall them and send another guy that's going to do, or a woman that's going to do, the will of the legislators of the state, and the governor. You know, it's a three-way deal. You know, both houses and the governor. Which is the administration. Same thing happens with the way the president chooses individuals, like for judges and other individuals for the court. Okay, anything else?
Was the book you referred to The Law That Never Was by Bill Benson?
That's the book. I got two volumes on it, and you can get all the information in that. He goes state by state. He goes every state. He goes through it all. What I'm going to put into the case is the congressional decision, the congressional count, and also some state counts. But yes, it is a two-volume book by Benson. Thank you. The Lord,
yeah.
Lord That Never Was, is it called, I think?
Right.
That what you said? Okay, yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
And that's the end of the questions, and I have no announcements.
Good, I'm out of breath.
Okay. Good.
Gerard, are you here, by the way, before we move over to Brent?
He has the panel up, but I don't see him as being called in. Brent is here, though.
Well, yeah, I see he's here. Before we move to Brent, I just want to make a note. Last week, I talked about Melaleuca. I did join Melaleuca. Actually, NLA joined Melaleuca. So anybody who comes in under, Melaleuca under NLA, they assist us in whatever profits we can get off of that. It is a multi-level marketing program. The way they're structured and the way things work, they show that they're really not a multi-level marketing, but generally they operate pretty much the same way. But the lingo stuff, they don't fall into that kind of a category. The key reason I went into Melaleuca is the products. The products are just outrageous. They're great. My wife wanted to get these products back, so I went back in. But also, you pull a few people in, you'll make enough money to pay for your product, and then few more people, and you can start to get a little profit. So if we can get a little bit of a monthly income from Melaleuca, that would be great. I haven't had time to put a page together yet. I'm going to be meeting with some people from Melaleuca, you know, my sponsor, and maybe one or two others, hopefully, to get more detail, especially a meeting. I think Wednesday I have a meeting. And then maybe before the weekend or over the weekend, I'll get a page up, and people who are interested in that particular product and or interested in helping to support us or even building a business out of that, you can sign up under National Liberty Alliance. But we'll see how that goes, and hopefully it'll be helpful. Okay. With that, we're going to move over to Brent. Gerard still hasn't called in yet, huh?
No.
Okay. We're going to move over to Brent. Brent Winters, he's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com, and he's going to talk to us tonight and teach us on something. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. Again, my comments are my own. My opinions are my own. May or may not comport with those of National Liberty Alliance, but in any case, whatever I say, I hope it stimulates the thinking about our fundamental law. The only remedy for lawlessness is true law. There is no other option. No matter what else you do, it has to come back to that, or what you've done. If you think you've gained anything, you'll keep nothing. Our country started not as a revolution. I know it's called that, but that's not what it was. And we struggle for a word that would apply to what Americans did when the country began. What they did was revolution. Revolution focuses on vengeance of the past. Revolution is called revolution because it's a revolving of violence. The revolutions of South America never stopped. The revolutions of Mexico have never stopped. France is notorious for never having stopped revolving round and round and round. It's like a organized crime syndicate. It's like the mafia, as it was once called. This is true of all organized crime, and that's what the law of the city countries are. They're just organized crime. Had a fellow say to me recently, boy, I'm sure glad that they finally got government or got crime off the streets and back in government where we can see what they're doing. That's a joke, but the fact is, it is in government. And once governments are controlled by criminal syndicates and become organized crime, become, as some people say, susceptible to prosecution under the RICO statutes, racketeering, well, things are going to get worse fast. Seems to me like we're moving in that direction. A man told me about 3 or 4 years ago that he had read a book that I put on my list that I wanted to read. That's been 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago, maybe. I still haven't read the book. I can't get to the reading I want to get to. But the book was about a half a dozen organized crime families that finally got hope behind the curtain in the dark. Nobody could see them, but they got hope of the levers of power of the country called Japan. And it was those organized crime families that pumped the Japanese people up to the ancient myths of Babylonianism that their ancestors had followed, namely that the present emperor of Japan was 142, I believe, or 143 generations from a man who was conceived by a sunbeam. And they've got the genealogical record, still have them, by the way. And that's, of course, why it was called the Land of the Rising Sun, and all the Japanese people were called Sons of the Sun, and there were 14 corners to the earth, and their gods, their ancestors, had called them to conquer the world. And that's the reason that they ultimately attacked us and decided they would conquer the world. And the bloodshed and the despair that have arisen out of that and the destruction of the Japanese people is a result of organized crime. That was the theme of this book, and this fellow that read it told me he had it well documented. Well, that stands to reason. Organized crime then brings revolution revolving of violence. Well, when our country began, it was not the revolving of violence. We weren't out to wreak vengeance upon anyone, the past for what was done. We weren't out to start a new calendar. We weren't even out, and we didn't form any new kind of government. No, we just said we want our common law rights, and we want the course of our common law, and we want to make sure the jury is in place. It's a creature of our common law. And when our country then, of course, by force of arms, and the question was settled on fields of battle, and we won, and Yorktown was besieged and captured, and the peace was settled in Paris. When all that was over, nothing much here changed. We still had the same courts. We still had the same rules of evidence in our courts that a common law country has. We still had the same separation of powers idea. We still had a limited executive, just like they were, like they did have in England. They had all that in England. They just refused to apply it here. They said the common law does not apply. Blackstone's Commentaries, Volume 1, says the common law does not apply in our American plantations, our American colonies. That was the doctrine that, as they understood it, they were wrong. They said the common law applied to the soil of England, and they called it the free soil doctrine, which we applied here later, just before, well, concerning slavery, we applied, and the different states, our courts applied that same doctrine, and they said, asserted again, no, we went to war over this question. They think their land over there is special, and that when anyone's foot touches the land, regardless of their former condition of servitude or slavery, they are ipso facto forever free. As soon as anyone's foot, that's the law, that's our common law. Well, they begin to say that here in America. Well, in the state of Illinois, in the state of Kansas, when we formed that state, in the state of Ohio, in the state of Pennsylvania, in the state of whatever, when anybody's foot who's a slave or a former slave or is bound in chains when their foot touches the soil of our, the territory, the soil of our state, they are forever free. They said that's the way God wants it. All the land of the earth is that away, not just some special parcel of real estate. It wasn't a revolution. We did not try to establish anything new. No, our Constitution is a harking back, as said Justice James Wilson, one of our first Supreme Court justices, a harking back to establish what had been lost, a more pure form of our common law government before the Norman Conquest of 1066. Well, we'd said our Constitution is not a corporate document. Some people say, well, our Constitution are the bylaws of the corporation, having formed the Declaration of 76, being the incorporation documents. That's not really the case. We'd said that our Constitution doesn't really establish, but affirms. Our Constitution, if you read the preamble, we went over it, it says that they were out to secure. They were not doing anything new. Our Declaration is a brief of common law government. The people that voted for it, that ratified it, the Americans, their minds and their understanding were awash in the language of the common law, said Justice Taft. He's right. If you're going to understand the Constitution, it doesn't explain anything. It's a dogmatic document, dogma. That means it just states the fact of the matter, doesn't explain it, doesn't explain what a legislature is, doesn't explain what an executive power is, doesn't explain what the judicial power is, doesn't explain what a jury is, doesn't explain what a dollar is, mentions all of those things, doesn't explain it. Doesn't explain what it means, the right to remain silent. It just states it flatly, forthrightly. Why? Well, because everybody understood at that time. Our common law was our identity at that time. If you talk about our common law now, it's not something most people understand, I've discovered. I say this with all due respect, if there is any due, to lawyers and judges. Most of them don't have a clue what the common law is. Why is that? It's not taught in our law schools. Why isn't it taught? well, Blackstone isn't red anymore. It is backhandedly by custom. We know it. We use the jury, the common law rules of evidence, the fundamentals of the common law. But most lawyers and most judges will tell you, and most professors at law schools will tell you, that our common law is case law. That's the extent and the furthest extent of their understanding of what our common law is. They have no clue that our Constitution is an affirmation, not an establishing out of whole cloth, but an affirmation of a more pure form of common law government. Our separation of powers is more pure than the separation of powers in England. What do I mean when I say that? Well, I mean that England's a common law country. They use the doctrine of separation of powers. It's not used in the rest of the world. They use it, but they will tolerate the chief executive de facto of the country also being the leader of the legislature, the parliament. The prime minister of England is the chief legislator of parliament. They'll allow that. Now, they won't allow one man to gather all three powers of government into his hands, legislative, executive, and judicial. By the way, the Bible doesn't allow that either. The Bible does not allow that. Just to drop a footnote, as a side note, King Saul of Israel, God prophesied through Samuel the prophet and said, I'm going to rip the kingdom from you. I'm going to take it from you. Why? Well, he had already exercised two of those powers of government, and he attempted to gather the third one into his hands. And the line was drawn, the hammer was dropped, and he was declared, well, he was persona non grata after that. And David then became king. He had exercised the office of legislative power. That's what prophecy is fundamentally. It is men speaking, legislating, speaking before men, representing God before men. And he had also, of course, exercised the executive office. He was king. That's the executive power at common law called king. Other names are used. We use president for an important reason that we need not talk about now. But he had exercised two of those, and then he attempted to exercise the office of priest, just the reverse of the office of the legislative power, called prophet in those days. He tried to exercise the office of priest, which is not representing the sovereign before the people and speaking the sovereign's legislation. A priest represents people before the sovereign. It's the other way around. But he tried to do that. And he lost his kingdom. So there is a limit according to the laws of nature unwritten in the nature of things. That's our common law. And the laws of nature of God written in the Bible, both of them undergird one another. But we have a more lively and sharper sense of separation of powers than do the English. People have said that America is more English in that respect than the English. And that's a big thing, that separation of powers. There are a lot of things that come in the train of understanding that. A while ago, there was the discussion that John brought up about Article 1 courts, Article 3 courts. I don't be befogged by that. If John's, of course, working through it, it is true that the legal pundits talk about Article 1, Article 3, and those words aren't found in our Constitution, Article 1 court. You won't find that anywhere. And it tends to obfuscate. That's one of those words I can't pronounce. Confuse. To make things worse when those kind of words are used, they're like words that theologians use to try to explain the Bible, and they come up with big fancy words. It doesn't help. In most cases, it hinders. Well, the same thing's true with constitutional law. But you have to deal with them, as John is doing, because that's what the court cases and the legal professors and the commenters are saying. But I want to say this about that, just to try to make it clear in case somebody says, I don't understand this. Just remember this. Those phrases aren't in the Constitution anywhere, Article 1 court, Article 3 court. And the Constitution just separates the powers of government into three offices, the three powers of government, and there are only three. The legislative, that's Article 1, talks about that. the executive, that's Article 2 of our Constitution, and the judicial, that's Article 3. Article 1 is about the legislative powers. Well, that being true, fundamentally, Congress doesn't have any legislative powers. It says right there at the beginning, all legislative power shall be vested or given to a Congress of the United States, all legislative power. No, the president doesn't have power to decree legislation. He's doing it. All of the regulations of the federal government, by the millions of regulations of the alphabet soup bureaucracies, are law. They're the same as legislation, called by a different word. That's our problem. The president is now exercising the legislative power, whereas the Constitution says all legislative power belongs to Congress. And by the way, Congress doesn't have any executive power, and Congress has no judicial power. And the executive, the president, he has no judicial power at all. But every administrative court that we have in the federal government is the president's court. And by the way, that court does the president's will. There's no balancing of matter. There's no adversarial process going on. Oh, there's a show of it. I've been in those courts. They try to act like it's adversarial. By the way, the laws of evidence don't even have to apply. Well, they apply them because it's good window dressing, but there's no law that says they have to apply the common law rules of evidence as the judicial branch ostensibly does. And then all judicial power, all, A-double-L, and in this case, the word all means all that it can mean. It means everything as pertains to judicial power is in, if it shall be vested in the Supreme Court of the United States. And then the inferior courts are the ones that are established. Congress does have the power to establish courts of the judicial branch, but those courts are not of the legislative branch, the congressional branch. No. They do have that power, so there's a separation. They establish the courts, but they can't control the courts. The president appoints the judges, but they're independent of him. By law, they must be. The law says they better be. It is a law in America that the three departments of the three branches of government are utterly independent, one from the other. And we're doing better than England, although we've got a ways to go. We've got some problems there. Well, let's get back. We were going through, and I don't want to not at least move through our Constitution of the United States. I'd said, and I believe this, is not a corporation. It's a common law trust. It's an entrustment of what? Rights and property and rights, called fundamental rights. And then, who's entitled to those entrusted rights, the benefits of them? Well, the beneficiaries. Who are the beneficiaries? The people of the United States. Now, finally, in respect to this trust business, it is a common law trust. And finally, and of no mean importance to the continued force of this national trust, is the duty of the beneficiaries. In a common law trust, be a family trust or a trust that's entrusted, for example, all mutual funds are common law trusts. They're not corporations on the stock market. Mutual funds have always been common law trusts, organized with trustees, beneficiaries, a trustee's duty, fiduciary, etc. But the beneficiaries in every trust have a very distinct duty, besides being fortunate enough to receive the benefits of the trust property. They're entitled to them, by the way. Nobody else is. But they have a duty on top of that. And that duty, every whit as necessary to the trust achieving its purpose, as is the duty of the trustees to obey the trust indenture, called here our Constitution. The duty of the beneficiaries is to enforce the trust. That is, to ensure that the trustees fulfill their charge under the terms of the written trust indenture. Again, our Constitution is the written trust indenture. That is the instructions. How, the H-O-W, things are to be done, the course of our common law, according to the common law of trust. There is no trust at common law. And by the way, just a side note, drop a footnote, only in common law countries does the trust exist. There is no such arrangement of property and persons in France and Germany and Russia and China and Vietnam and Japan and South America, all the world. Only about five common law countries, and those countries, only in those countries is there what we call a common law trust, a division of property into equitable, that is beneficial, and legal, that is ownership, title, splitting of title. There are things that look like trust in other countries, like the fideicommissum. Louisiana has that because it's not a common law jurisdiction fundamentally. It's a Roman jurisdiction because of the Romanism of their religion down there when they started, the French. But the rest of the states, trusts exist in our common law country and other countries. The fideicommissum comes close. The Salmon of the German states comes close, but it's not a common law trust. No, I shouldn't say it even comes close. It looks like it on the surface, but there's a lot of differences that render it not a trust at all. Well, that's what we have here. And a trust does not exist at common law unless it has an enforcer. An enforcer. And the enforcer of every trust is the beneficiaries. That's why we say the beneficiaries are an indispensable element of the common law trust. If no beneficiaries are appointed, identifiable, fairly identifiable beneficiaries, you may have done everything else right. You may have a trust document. You may have appointed trustees. You may have shown trust intent, trust purpose, all of those elements that are necessary. But you forgot to identify the trustees clearly. There is no trust. One of the reasons why there is no trust is because there's no enforcer. You see, the government is not the enforcer of a common law trust. The beneficiaries are. And if the beneficiaries don't do it, no one will. Do you really expect it in the case of our country? Do we really expect the people that are handed massive amounts of power, do we really expect that they will always use a little of it to their advantage? Well, that's against the law, the common law trust, for them to benefit themselves. The trust property is only for the benefit of the beneficiaries, and the trustees are to make sure that that is true even to their own hurt. I've seen trusts, family trusts, and, yeah, family trust, where the beneficiaries were trying to destroy, utterly destroy, the trustee. I mean, ruin his reputation, make sure his law license was taken away, hated him so much. But that trustee still had a duty to do everything he could to make sure that the trust property, the benefit of it, the beneficial title, the equitable title, only inure to the benefit of those vicious, ugly, criminal beneficiaries who were trying to destroy him personally, He got so bad, I thought they were going to try to see a way to have him killed. He didn't falter in his duty. He did take the matter to court, and the judge gave him some relief, some protection, and did what he had to do it. But that did not, at our law, matter of fact, the duty of a trustee at common law, in a common law country like ours, is the highest duty of relationship known at common law, is the duty of a trustee. The duty of an agent is a fiduciary relationship. It's a high one, but it's not that high. Back to the beneficiaries. Nonetheless, even though that duty is high, let's say the trustee falters. Who is responsible to enforce the terms of the trust, to get rid of the beneficiary, or get rid of the trustees, get new ones in there, make sure that that one's punished, whatever you got to do? Well, those that are handed the levers of power in America are the trustees. Those that are officers of the judicial branch, officers of the legislative branch, congressmen, state representatives in the states, officers of the executive branch, the president of the United States, the presidents, the governors of the states, and all the people, the bureaucrats that work for them. They are the trustees of the rights of the people, right on down to the county level. The sheriff, for example, at the county level, his powers are executive. They're not legislative. And they are not judicial. He doesn't stand in judgment or sit in judgment on anybody. No, he enforces the law. And he chooses how and what law he should enforce. He ought to. He must be of independent mind, like the juror, like the judge. Everybody's independent in a common law country. We're not all fawning towards some man or some woman or some combination of men. No, if we are, we'll lose our freedoms. What is king in America? Law. Law is king. And when you say law is king, we are a government of laws and not of men. What do we mean by that? Let's get behind it. What does it really mean? Well, if law is king, that means the lawgiver is king, the only true lawgiver. And who is that? Now, James the Apostle tells us in the New Testament. I know I'm repeating myself, but these fundamentals bear repeating until they're driven home. Talking to a gal today who I'd known for years, been saying things to her. We get in brother and sister arguments about fundamental things. It's been, how long have I known her? Let me think. Going back, 1985, that's quite a while. An intelligent gal. Matter of fact, the gal has a PhD. Well, she had the discipline to get it. Whatever else she may or may not know, Christian gal. She finally said to me just last year, after all these years, Brent, I think I understand what you've been saying all these years. I said, you really do, Deb? She said, yeah, I think I do. I said, what is it? She said, I think you're saying that the will of God is law. And she said, I never put that together. And I chafed every time you said the law of God is enforceable against all of us. I said, you have hit the nail with your head, Debbie, after all these years. If we've got something stuck in our brain, all of us do, every one of us have things stuck in our brain that block us from the truth capturing our minds at some point. And sometimes it's at the most fundamental point, like with Debbie. Love her to death, she's smart, but on that particular point, the words were throwing her. And that is the deceit of words that throw people. The word law is given a bad reputation. And the evil empire, the minions, and the myrmidons of it have orchestrated that over a long period of time. But law should be our friend. Oh, it can, the penalties can be terrible. Of course, as Christian men and women, the penalty has been taken away because God himself took on the form of a man and bore the brunt of the penalty, all of it, for our law breaking. We don't worry about that anymore. What a what a blessed idea that I don't have to worry about that anymore. But once I don't have to worry about that eternal punishment anymore, I'm free. I'm not under the gun of guilt. I move forward. There is no guilt. There is no punishment. All of it's taken away. I can move forward and I can say, yeah, law is binding on me. It sure is. Which part? Well, the curses have been taken away. All that's left is the benefits. And I get the benefits. So why don't I go out here and do my best to try to follow it? Well, that's what our Constitution of the United States is all about. Law. How things are done, that means our common law. It's a process-oriented law. Concentrate on the process, not the result. The means justifies the ends in our common law country. The ends just does not justify the means, as it does in the rest of the world. If the ends justifies the means, things get real ugly sometimes, and that's, of course, what goes on in these South American jails, and the French jails have been that way for years. Nazism was that way. Well, we have this national trust. We are the beneficiaries of it. It's our duty to enforce it. How do you do that? Our common law provides the machinery. It's called the courts. If that doesn't work, we have the legislative branch. If that doesn't work, we have the judicial branch. I don't know if you've noticed, but the judicial branch has been exercising its prerogative over, the executive branch has been exercising its prerogative over the legislative and the judicial branch and pardoning people, pardoning them after they were convicted of crimes. That's an important balance. That's an exclusive. Only in common law countries is there what we call the doctrine of pardon. And by the way, it's bound up also with the common law doctrine of outlawry. That's an important common law doctrine that we in America have experienced that is bound up with, in its own way, with the idea of pardon. Well, because Americans, under the terms of the trust indenture, are joint owners of beneficial title, the beneficial title our Constitution bespeaks, the common law of trust binds each one under a duty to protect this interest in rights, his fundamental rights, God-given, direct from God, no mediator. He has a duty to protect these rights against all enemies, whether foreign, that's most often understood as a member of the militia of the several states by force of arms. As a matter of fact, that's what our Constitution teaches. Enemies against fundamental rights, foreign enemies, that's as a member of the militia, or domestic, that's as a member of the jury by force of independent judgment. So militia duty has to do with enemies foreign at common law, and jury duty has to do with enemies of our law of the land domestically. And that's what that means when that oath is administered, as our Constitution requires, to all officers, state and federal, that they will support and defend the Constitution of the United States. What is the Constitution of the United States? Well, it calls itself the law of the land. Article 6, this is the supreme law of the land. It calls itself that. And the oath is to defend our Constitution, which is the law of the land. Well, then the oath is to defend the law of the land, you see. And that's the ancient oath of our common law. And that's the way it used to be said centuries ago. When the oath was taken, it was to defend the law of the land. And when you defend the law of the land, you defend the land. And without the land, we don't have a country. No, folks that study international law, they study, for example, they have to learn the criteria for what constitutes a sovereign country. And at international law, as oh, it has always been understood for centuries, and we still use these standards, a country has to have about three things, and that makes a country. Number one, it has to have a land area that's defined. There has to be boundaries. Boundaries to a land area. And if those boundaries aren't well defined, you may have everything else you need, but you don't have a country. Well, that, of course, goes to the question of whether or not there should be a wall down on the Mexican border. If there's a problem there, what the reason folk are talking that way is because fundamentally we all know deep inside, if our boundaries aren't defined, we don't have a country. That's true. There must be a parcel of real estate that has definite boundaries. That's a test of international law. Number two, there must be a law that governs raw territoriality, governs that parcel of real estate within those well-defined boundaries. If you have that, that's the second criteria. The third criteria is there must be a people subject to that law and dependent upon that land. Well, if they're dependent upon that land, and they are in America, we've always been dependent upon this land. Oh, I know, we buy and sell and trade with other countries, and we enjoy the benefits of their land, too, as they enjoy the benefits of ours, but we're dependent upon the land. If we get the resources out of it, make goods out of it, and we trade it, we're still dependent upon our land, and we are. And we've been blessed with a whole lot of wealth. Just within the last 10 years, we've discovered larger pools of oil than we have ever discovered before in the history of our country. And these two pools of oil are speculated to be larger than any discovered in the history of the world. We've only begun. USGS put out a bulletin about, now it's been pretty near 30 years ago, but 25 years ago, making the point that at most we've only recovered 5%. Of the recoverable gold within the lower 48 states, only 5%. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface of the mineral wealth of North America. Well, our Constitution of the United States is established because it's the law of the land. It is the supreme law of the land, and it is an entrustment to those whoever are in office and charged with protecting, office holders, protecting, enforcing that law against enemies foreign, as members of the militia of the several states, the four militia clauses of our Constitution, and enemies domestic. So we are the enforcers. What are we going to do about it is the question. So this is not to be overlooked. But protecting the legal title, by the way, the trustees at common law hold legal title, and beneficiaries hold equitable title. Beneficiaries protect their own equitable title because neither title can continue in property without the other. Every piece of property, whether movable, immovable, chattel, or land, realty, or personality, have two kinds of title to them. And there's no way really you can separate that title from them. But just one more point. Finally, our Constitution does not claim to secure liberty. Our Constitution does not claim to secure liberty. It claims, to quote our preamble, it claims to secure the blessings of liberty. Well, that goes along with the idea of the trust. The liberty is the property, the entrusted property. The blessings are the equitable benefits. Blessing, again, is an old word. Has to do with blood, by the way. It's an old Anglo-Dane word, an old Germanic word, an old Scandinavian word, a Nordic word, as they like to say in the dictionary sometimes. And blessing, bless, bliss, a related word, has to do with blood. And it has to do with sacrifice. And it has to do with covenants and blood oath. It's an old word. And blessings, traditionally, and you can see this in the Bible, in the laws of nature's God, written for laws of nature's God, you can see that the blessing, the ultimate blessing, this is not an ancient pagan idea. It's sometimes used by pagan people. But the oath, the covenant, and the blood of God, I'm quoting Acts chapter 20, where the blood of God is cited there, bespeaking, of course, the deity, the supreme deity of Jesus Christ, and his blood being the blood of God. And often, it's oft overlooked, seldom mentioned, should be mentioned more often. But that oath and that covenant were sealed in the blood of the maker of heaven and earth. And the blessings flow out of that. What are blessings? They're a benefit. Just making the connection. Somebody's got to pay when there's blessing. When there's benefit, somebody is paying. Somebody is making the sacrifice. It may be a joy for them to do so. I talked to my father not long ago. I'm very fortunate. He's still moving around and doing things. Not young, but he's still going. And I got to talking to him about raising his family and all the hardships that went with it, and I remember the hardships, and watching him when I was a teenager, he went through hardships, all kinds, financial hardships, health hardships, while he was trying to lick the financial hardships, and I said, I know it was hard, and he said, you know, it was, of course, just my own personal struggle, but he said, I count it all as a privilege to have done that, to have been able to try to do it. Well, that was an encouragement to me, and I pass that along to you. The struggle that God gives us is a privilege that he grants to us to take care of families, to help other people, to be of a benefit somehow to somebody somewhere else. You know, even if you're taking care of yourself and that's all you can do, you're benefiting other people because other people, you relieve somewhat of the burden from them. We have family members now that are very old, and they're taking care of themselves the best that they can, but they're old enough that they can't take care of anybody else. And we feel blessed, to use that word again. We're blessed that they can sit up and take nourishment, feed themselves, and get up and walk from one place to the other. That's relieves us of a great burden. We're thankful. Well, back to that word blessing. I'll finish up with that. It's a very important word. It has to do with blood and the benefits, and it bespeaks the idea that people make sacrifices. They enjoy doing it sometimes. Like my father said, I count it a privilege to have done that. Well, just one more principle of interpretation. Well, no, I want to mention one more thing about blessings. A related word to blessing and bless is bliss. And bliss, that is what arises from those who bless. Our Constitution uses the word blessing. And it is a blessing. It is bliss. It is bliss to bless another. Those words closely related for that reason. Enjoyment of one's liberty. Thus, it is seen again the need of the following principle of interpretation. Principle of interpretation of writings of legal significance, such as our Constitution of the United States. In order to know the meaning of a text, such as the text of our Constitution, ask not only what does it say, but ask also what does it not say. Because if you ask what it doesn't say, and say, wait a minute, is it that it does not say this? It says this, but that means it does not say this, this, and this. And that prevents you from wandering from what it does say. This has been my experience for myself. I try to make a point of asking, now, wait a minute, let me think about what it does not say. So the preamble says the general government's power is indeed general. That means without discrimination among the states or the people in its application. Of the 17 powers and 4 kinds of crimes our Constitution lists, just 17 powers, some people say 18, but 17 or 18 powers and 4 kinds of crimes, that's all our general government in Washington, D.C. has jurisdiction over, and leaves to the states every particular power that's not listed therein. Well, we got past, finally, that preamble. Boy, that thing is packed pregnant with meaning. And we'll start again, Lord willing, next time they let me talk, we'll start again Article 1 of our Constitution. Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1. Back to you, John. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay. I guess we'll move over to Q&A now. If anybody has any questions or comments, hit the star 6. I think it's star 6. Yeah, star 6 to get into the queue. We do have a few people in the queue. Gerard, are you here yet? Did Gerard come in yet?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you want to take the panel? I'll hang out for a little while longer, answer some questions, but
yep.
I'm falling asleep already. I'm exhausted from the day. Too many things going on.
Okay.
In fact, I want to talk to you in the morning, so answer my call.
All right. Don't call me at 5 o'clock, though. Okay.
No, what, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Okay, our first victim is from New Jersey. That's, what's his name there? Culpepper. Go ahead. You are unmuted.
Gerard, you got me on there now?
I don't know why it did that. It jumped down.
I don't know.
Go ahead.
Okay, this is Mike from Buffalo. Hey, I don't know if you guys are aware of that. Of this group, it's called For the Children, but it's a parents' rights group against CPS. Well, they're having a big rally in Washington, D.C., September 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And they're going to have speakers at the mall, at the Capitol Mall, speakers, and they're going to have a concert on Sunday, and they're going to have open congressional panels for the people. And there's going to be a lot of people there. And what I was thinking was, is there anybody in that area that could come down and represent National Liberty Alliance and be able to, talk to the people? Would you guys like to do that? There's going to be a lot of people there, a lot of people.
What did you say, December or September?
September, the ninth month.
September. Oh, I was going to say it's going to be awful cold.
What day?
December.
It's on the 8th and 11th and 12th.
8th? Did you say 8th? Yeah.
September 8th through the 12th.
Well, it's five days, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be for 5 days. On Sunday is going to be the concert. And it's going to be an open mic event, basically. And the other groups that are also doing things like National Liberty Alliance are doing, they're going to be there as well. But I don't know what they offer. But I think, from what I understand, there's a lot of people in those other groups, and if we could combine, because we're all in the same fight together. And this is specifically dealing with the family courts and the child protection to get their kids back from foster care.
Why don't you give Jan a call, and let's try to get a conference call going, and we'll think and talk about that and see once if someone could go down to Washington, maybe even myself or Gerard or somebody.
Okay.
But give Jan a call, let's see. We'll get a conference call going.
Right? I'll get the lady who's setting it up. Joyce Catalano is the lady who's doing it. She's setting it all up, so I'll get her on too, and then she could explain a lot more. She was going to be on tonight, but she got held up, and she's in New York City in traffic with the buses and so forth.
Is she familiar with us?
No, she wasn't, and I turned her on to National Liberty Alliance, and she wants to join, and she wants to be a part of it, and I know there's other people, too, that would be very willing, and I've contacted some of the people. She gave me their names from these other groups, and I spoke to them about National Liberty Alliance, and I haven't really heard anything back, but I think we could push it and be able to join forces with these other groups.
Let's see what we can do on that. And you might want to suggest that she listen to the last couple of MP3s for the last Monday night meetings, the last couple of weeks, maybe even tonight, you know, a lot of information we gave earlier on and last week and the week before, so...
I know there was quite a bit on there. That was great. It was good. Very good. But, okay, that's all I wanted to say, and I'll give Jan a call, and we'll get something set up. Okay?
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have a blessed night.
Thank you.
I'm out.
You too.
Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. Okay, you've been unmuted. There you go.
Okay. Did you guys receive that article I sent you with regard to, it says Southern Poverty Law Center makes huge settlement with anti-extremist group it called anti-Muslim. It says here the Southern
Poverty
Law Center announced Monday that it would pay $3.375 million to settle a lawsuit brought by a British anti-extremism group that would put on a list of anti-Muslim extremists. I don't know if you guys have seen the Southern Poverty Law Center's analysis of the National Liberty Alliance, but they really do a hatchet job, you know, in trying to say how terrible you are, but they even say all these things about these terrible quotes that you make, like... if we the people can reinstate justice and demand that elected officials and bureaucrats obey the law or be indicted, we would have then succeeded in reinstating the Constitution and save our republic. I mean,
that's terrible.
You know,
that's terrible.
It is. There's
that's
a lot of terrible things
terrible.
To put in here. So, you know, you guys would have a field day with them. And if you want to get financing for the NLA, I'd love to see it at the expense of the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, how many of these kind of settlements do you think they would be able to sustain?
I didn't think they had that much money, or we might have sued them before now.
Well, you got a new target.
Yeah. You know...
We considered suing them with the judiciary, but it just didn't make sense to go after them with the judiciary. So,
and almost like we're giving them too much credibility.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain
and we got many, many other things to do than to sue them. But, yeah, I'd love to sue those people.
I mean, how do they even have their authority to give law enforcement a list of people? I mean, where... where is their credentials? Who are they? What are they? I mean, can you even, I mean, you go look at their stuff, it doesn't even really say what they, you know, who they are and what they are.
You're self-appointed.
They're self-appointed, and the FBI says that they are an expert on terrorism. Now, what made them an expert? I mean, look, if they're an expert on terrorism, it's only because they're a terrorist. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I don't know. It's, but they definitely do a lot of defamation, you know, and they also have a lot of wrong quotes, and they actually quote people that were not with us that did things when we told them, don't do that, you go to jail, and we sanctioned them and pulled ourselves from them. They still take those people that got arrested for doing certain things, like in Florida with that guy Terry. We were absolutely not part of them when they did what they did, but they're associating that because he was a NLA member. But they didn't file anything in the courts the way we would have. And we, matter of fact, we told them, if you do that, you're going to jail. And we had to put a disclaimer up to separate ourselves. And yet the Southern Poverty Law Center still quotes that as being a group of the NLA members that did that and got in trouble in the courts. So they don't,
yeah,
they don't have the facts based at all.
There's a lot of guilt by association. You should check this out because this was updated, I think, March 18th, and they're still, you know, quoting all this BS. So, like I said, you know, you guys would have a field day with this stuff. It's all lies. It's all guilt by association. You know, like all the terrible organizations like the Oath Keepers and all the stuff. I yield.
Hello? Can
Hello,
you hear me?
Yes. Yeah,
oh,
I can hear you now.
I lost my mic there. Yeah. Anyway, I did see that recently, and John and I talked about it, and what I was saying is, you know, what they say about the Oath Keepers is pretty bad, and what's his name, Rhodes, the head of it, he's a Harvard lawyer, and if anybody should be suing them, you would think he would, you know, and
yeah.
He's just ignoring them, so maybe, you know, look, for us right now, it's kind of a distraction. I mean, we got a lot of lawsuits that we could be doing or should be doing and we may be doing in the future, but you know, we only have so many irons in the fire. That's the problem.
Yeah, you know? I know, and I don't know if they'll be able to collect that money anyway. Who knows how much money they actually have in the bank?
Well, they probably got insurance.
Well, maybe
they probably got liability insurance. I bet you they don't have any money. They probably
right.
have insurance.
Well, you know? All their money goes into fundraising anyway. None of it actually goes into helping any of these poor, oppressed people.
Yeah, right. Yeah, actually, if you took them to court, you could prove that they're a terrorist organization, the way they operate. The things they do and the things they say, they're actually the real terrorists here, you know?
Right.
So, you know. But, you know, not only are they defaming us, they're putting us at danger. Because they're labeling us something that, like John says, that the cops equate the cop killer. So
right.
if one of us gets pulled over, especially somebody who's active like John or I, you know, this is that sovereign citizen one there, you know. So I don't know. I don't know that all law enforcement actually believe what they say, you know.
Right.
And in a certain sense, the fact that we're on their radar, maybe that's a good thing. Because just like they, you know, no press is worse than bad press. So the fact that they're complaining about us means that we must be making a difference somewhere, you know.
Well, I don't know if you guys are on a list. I don't think I'm on a list because I went to the federal courthouse the other day to get something. But I know they went after Lydia and Jason. So, you know, it's something to keep in mind if you go to the courthouse. I don't know if they follow you guys around, but they did it to them.
Yeah, you know, look, we've been to plenty of courthouses, and we've had contingents.
Yeah, but
of they make
a lot of trouble too. You know, I mean, look, you know, they may be doing the right thing, but then they're very attackful and pursuant on these things. I mean, Jason got himself in trouble doing something stupid. He took pictures of a, what was it, the security something, Homeland Security vehicle
or
something?
Well, actually what it was, he took a picture of a Homeland Security police car. It wasn't
right.
Even,
he shouldn't have, he shouldn't have done that.
I know, he's asking for trouble.
Asking for trouble, okay?
Yeah.
Let me tell you, every time I get stopped by a cop, this is God's honest truth, and the cop always... According to him, has a good reason to stop me because I do a lot of speeding. I'm always in a hurry. And 50% of the time, maybe even more than that, they don't even give me a ticket. I'm very polite, you know, talk with them and give them my license, and I'm on my way. You know, when I do get a ticket, you know, I just send in a paper, and half the time they just I just never hear anything back from them, and the other half of the time they pursue me, and I just pay the fine then at that point. So, you know, you comply where you can and don't make too much trouble, but be, you know, fight them one on the top. Fight them in the courtroom, you know?
Right. Okay. I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. I yield.
Okay.
Thank you, Terry. Yeah. Okay. Next questioner. It's the famous Crystal, Matt. Crystal.
Hey, Crystal.
I bet you we put her to sleep.
Yes, we did it again.
I'm telling you.
We're notorious for that, aren't we?
I'm telling you.
It must be Crystal. Brent, that Brent character, huh?
Yeah, I'm blaming it on him, too. All right, so I'll go ahead to the next one. I can't keep her in there. She'll have to get back in, that's all. Moving right along. I can't read who this is.
Hello?
Bronson? Yes.
Hello?
Are you there? Who's this?
Connie.
Connie, are you from Connecticut?
I am from Connecticut. I wrote a check to the IRS because I'm a self-employed, and I paid $15,000. And then I got a tax bill a couple months ago, and it said I owed like $13,800. And so what happened, I disputed it, and I said I paid $15,000 as an estimated tax payment. Plus, I ended up paying them $25,000 last year. But anyways, what they did was they put the check through for $1,500. Now, my balance did go down significantly, so I assumed the check cleared and everything. But anyway, so I have to go through all my bank statements and now try to figure out, did they take $1,500 or $15,000? But if they only took $1,500, because the IRS agent and his supervisor said they've never seen a mistake like this on their end. He did see that I wrote the check for $15,000, but he saw it only clearing for that the person keyed it in as $1,500 and that they only took $1,500. So
that's impossible. That doesn't
so,
even make sense.
You know, right. And so now I'm looking at now the interest and penalties are up to $14,000, even though it should have been like, say, I owed $13,500. And I have to go through my bank statements and find out, did anybody ever go back and take the other $13,500? But
is this their estimate, or have you done your paperwork and this is what you owe them?
Initially in January, they only took $1,500 from my account, so now I have to go.
But when they give you the big bill, $15,000 or whatever it was. Is that something that they came up with, or did you come up with that file?
That was her tax that she sent them.
Okay,
but
you filled out the tax. Yeah, but the question is, did she fill out the tax returns and then decide that she owed $15,000 and send a check in for $15,000? Or did they do the computations? Did they do an estimate and say, hey, you owe us $15,000?
I use a tax accountant, and I owed them like $25,000, but I paid them $15,000 by January 15th. And so okay. I had to cut a check for $10,000 in January, I mean, in by April 15th when my accountant, because I use an accountant to avoid tax issues, right?
Right.
And when I sent that estimated tax payment of $15,000, they show that they only put it, but the agent and his supervisor were looking at those checks front and back on their end, and they said, yes, you wrote this for $15,000. But we only keyed it in and took $1,500 from your bank. So you still owe us $13,500 plus penalties and interest.
Well, what did your bank say? What does the bank statement say?
I got copies of all my statements. So now I have to go through from January until now and find out, did they ever take the $13,000? Potentially, I might owe them $13,500.
Well, it should be pretty easy if you run down and find the check and see what the deduction was, $15,000 or $1,500.
So, but they had a picture of the check. They had a photograph of the check, and they said you wrote it for $15,000, but we only took $1,500. But now we're going to penalize you. I mean, come on. How do they get $1,500 out of a check that's written for $15,000? And what are they doing?
Well, look at if you got a picture of it with a signature on it, yeah, you paid.
Well, so I have the check, and I wrote it for I got it from the bank, and it says $15,000, and the agent agreed. I wrote it out for $15,000. I said that was painful to write out that check, and you know, be hit with penalties and interest because
you know what I would have told them right off the bat? You guys got a thief. Somebody stole the other $14,000, the other whatever.
$13,500.
You must have a thief in your office. You better get internal affairs here, because here's the check. This is my proof. This is what I'm taking to court when I sue you.
Well, and so he goes, even though you wrote it for $15,000, we only took $1,500, so I want to go back in my bank statements and find out did they ever.
How do they have control over it? They're not bankers.
They want my bank statements.
How do they say we only took? You wrote a check for $15,000. It's canceled.
Right.
It came back to the bank, but they only took $1,500. Sounds to me like they got a problem. It's not.
Yeah.
It's, look, it's their problem. It's not your problem. We only took 15. What do you mean you only took? What'd you do? You go to the bank and you cashed the check and you said, but we only want 1,500. Leave the rest in there. It doesn't even make sense.
The solution's going to be with the whatever came out of that bank account ultimately, and it's a shame that you got to give these people that much money. Yeah, I don't know whether I could write that check.
Yeah, but isn't the canceled check a fiduciary instrument? Doesn't it say, here's this check written, and it's canceled, which means the bank paid $15,000?
Well, I would agree that that check is sufficient if it's got a cancel mark on everything, they go to Hades. But on the other hand, you know, if you do go back and look a little deeper and you discover that somehow it was taken as a $1,500 instead of $15,000, you know, the question is you know, now you're dealing with a moral problem.
No, here's what happened, I think.
But, I mean, on the other hand, you know, it's immoral that they even, and obscene that they even take this kind of money from we the people.
I think they got the $15,000 and they keyed it in as $1,500.
Well, she's going to find out.
On their record, it looks like they only got $1,500.
Look at it. It's either came out of her account or it didn't, period. You know, it's a very simple project.
Initially, only $1,500 did come out when that check came through. But now I have to see, did anybody ever recognize the mistake and take another $13,500? But they said no, they've never in all their career, they never seen any mistake happen like this on their end. And I said,
well, you
I
know,
did
look
not
at that. They're thieves and liars anyway, so they're not telling you the truth.
Well.
You know, I mean, every time I talk to those people, they're thieves, and they know what they're doing, in my opinion. They're cold people, and they don't care.
Well, I want to publicly ridicule them and say I wrote out a check for $15,000. They were stupid enough, or you know, careless enough to key it in as $1,500. I guess they key it in, and it goes directly out of our bank account into their account.
Well, look, when you find out what happened, when you find out what happened, come back and let us know.
It sounds to me like they're tapped into the Federal Reserve. If they could take your check and key it in and take the money and it takes out the amount that they put it in for, they're bypassing the normal process of cashing a check.
I think public shame on them for making a mistake and then trying to penalize me for it. And anyways, the other thing is I use Maluka. I've been with them almost 30 years. They sell amazing products. And, healthy, healthy tea tree oil, Activate C, really good products from Maluka. I just wanted to say that. Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned Maluka earlier, John.
I'm sorry. Someone else was talking to me. So you belong to Maluka also?
30 years I've been buying their products, and targeted individual, and I've given them to many TIs across the country because it's mixed with biofilm and detox.
The products are fantastic. You can't beat them. I mean, look at it. They work great on the skin. Melaleuca oil is one of the best things you can put on your skin, and they got the most potent. And they put it in every single one of their products, at least all their skin products, their laundry detergent, everything. And so you're bathing in the stuff, and it's great. It's a great healing powers and great for the skin. So, you know, we're going to I did some research on it a while back. I got to dig up stuff, and they got a lot of research. So we'll put together something nice on a page to introduce people to it and to drive them towards you know, maybe buying the product, you know. And at the same time, they'll be supporting in L.A.
Yeah, it's excellent at getting nanotechnology out of the body and off the body.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yep.
Yep. I know all about it. Nanotechnology.
All right. Anything else?
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. And listen, when you find out what happened, let us know. Don't leave us hanging.
I'm going to give it to him. I'm going to give it to him good. I mean, I already talked to him once, but I'm going to give it to him good again. I lectured them. How on earth could you make such a mistake, you know?
They're panicking because Trump's going to get rid of them, so they got to get as much money as they can before they go out of business.
Well, and the shady thing, he's like, we want your bank statement to see what came out of your account. Now, I'm going to use the black marker and hide a lot of information because they're opening, you know, they're trying to get into my business, you know.
You're gonna redact it? You're gonna redact everything? You're gonna pull the
If I went to the gas station or paid my cell phone bill or whatever, I'm gonna redact a lot of it. It's none of their business.
Did you see that report they released? And every line on the page was blacked out except for like the first one. The whole page was blacked.
That's what I'm going to do, except for the IRS transaction. They have no right to see any other transaction where I buy gas or food or anything.
Look, they watch everything they want, too. They're lawless. They don't care. They get the information. But do what you got to do to give them trouble. You know what I mean? It's just...
I worked for the federal government at the FDA for 8.5 years, so I know what I'm dealing with.
Right.
Been there, done that. I know how they... Yeah. I sued them, you know. I mean, I had cases against them. We settled out of court. I'm never supposed to talk about it, but I don't care because they're hitting me with direct energy, chemical, and biological. So I'm not going to be quiet. The government paid me off big bucks. Yep. The check went to my lawyer. They gave me a check.
Good. Well, that's good to hear. It's nice to know somebody has some kind of a, you know, result with them, you know.
I'm going to have a case against them again because they implanted me from head to toe and are directing 7 satellite frequencies at the cell phone range and have me under tight surveillance because of what I know from my job. So I'm going to have another case against them. This time I'm not going to settle. I'm going to go all with me so I can expose them.
Okay, yep. Just be careful. Okay.
Yeah, really. All right, thanks for the call. Hey,
yeah.
Gerard, Crystal, unmute Crystal now because she's back. Let me mute.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, now you can unmute Crystal.
Crystal.
It takes a while for it to show up on the right side,
yeah,
by the
hello.
Way.
Hello.
So.
There you go.
Hi. I'm sorry.
Hey, Crystal.
How are you?
Good.
How you doing?
So. They're going real crazy up here at this point. When I went to the court and stuff last week, and I had the witnesses, they called me in.
Hey, Crystal, you know what you should do is, in the beginning of the, you should get a hold of Jan and let Jan know that you have an update or something, and we'll get you in at the beginning of the call as someone updating. So, but go ahead.
Yeah, okay. And they told me, I was there at 10 o'clock, so this judge, the retired judge, he came in, he was supposed to be on vacation, he came in especially just for me, so... the two attorneys, now the GE woman showed up, and the attorney, myself, and then I brought people, I had 1, 2, 3 witnesses, you know, that, because I dared not go near by myself. So I explained the whole thing. Well, first she goes, well, we're tired of her playing the games and extending this and da-da-da-da-da. And I have my papers in the appellate, and they went over the appellate again, which is supposed to be still standing. And so they asked her, she goes, well, I would like to reiterate why we're here, because this has been going on for over 3 years and 9 months. And we are tired of the games, and she's just trying to stall, and we want her out. We want the property because she has not paid. So then the judge said to me, you know, what do I have to say for myself? And I said, I swear the truth, told the truth, nothing but the truth. And I said, so I'm Jehovah God and Jesus Christ. So all of a sudden, I said, first of all, who is the injured party? I said, secondly, I said, I have never, ever taken a loan or nothing with GE Federal Credit Union. I said, for the past 4 years that you have been harassing me, because it started in June of 2014, I said, can I see the contract, or can I see the copy of the deed or loan that I have taken? To this day, you have not prevailed anything. I repeatedly asked each and every one of you with a sworn notarized affidavit, also with the subrogation that we signed, I said, and you have never answered me. I said, oh, by the way, I realized I found out anything over $20, I could have a common law jury, which I've been asking you repeatedly. I said, also, I asked you to recuse yourself from my case because you, Your Honor, said that I had a case against you, and you said, I said, yes, I do. And I said, and I would like for you to recuse yourself from this case. You told me, no, you're not going to recuse yourself. I said, that's conflict of interest, because yet you are the judge. I said, and you're the jury. I said, from day one, the first time I had you in court on December 14th, I asked you, am I a public servant of this court? You told me, no. I said, is this my grand jury? You said, no, you are the grand jury. I said, I would like your resignation because you just committed treason. I said, how can you be the judge and the jury? I said, another thing, no one here decides anything except for a judge and the jury. No one swears in or a sworn oath. You took a oath, sworn oath. And he said, you have an open bond to be obligated and that we are to be treated fairly. And I said, since I've been coming in here to the court, I said, the only one, the whole court is just between you and the attorneys. I said, there is no one being treated fair. I said again, but I'm not here for everybody. I'm here for myself. And I asked, under my constitutional rights, do have be treated fairly. I said, I have my warranty deed. I have my life use. I have my quick claim deed. And I said, and plus my life use for 100 years. I said to you on the last day, who is going to change these legal documents? And I said, all this begin with this WPCA, which is illegal, and also the MERS. I said, they change people's names on their mortgages. And then if you're in a fixed, like, for example, I was in a fixed rate when I did my mortgage because I'm going to put it together. Then all of a sudden, they changed it and put me in a quick claim. I said, who signed my name and changed it? All this is illegal. I said, this is the work I used to do, so I'm very well knowledgeable of it. I said, and also, that WPCA is a made-up bill that they piggybacked on the water bill, because it's like we're paying two sewer bills, but they got this WPCA, and they are going to people's savings accounts, checking out, taking $10,000 and $20,000, and the bill is no more than 4 to 12 cents. I said, this is all fraudulent. I would like this case. I would like you to discharge and dismiss this case. So he didn't say anything, but this time he wasn't really being sarcastic because he saw there was other people in there. And so I got a call on Friday that he's taking my property anyways. They're going to put me out of my house. Under what grounds? And also, I told you, I was on TV with Blumenthal about these illegal foreclosures, which I guess he was a little, but we're going to follow through. Now, we were all coming up with a plan because everybody's just so fed up with this mess, to write letters, and we could maybe put some kind of standard letter and have it notarized, an affidavit, and I said, well, maybe we do, like, you know, for my case, but there's a lot of cases similar, but maybe we can leave certain things out for how long, you know what I'm saying? And then we have it notarized, or let's be like an affidavit letter, and then we make the copies of it after we have it notarized and send it to the attorney general. We need to send this to the police department, maybe to the mayor, to the governors, to maybe NLA, whomever it needs to go to, you know, so they, and we will give them like 5 days to answer us or respond, 5 or 10 days. What do you think on that, John?
Yeah, I didn't get the last part of that.
I said, because everybody's just so fed up because there's like five people right in our, and it's funny, we're all about the same age. We've all owned our properties almost the same time, and all of us are in foreclosure.
Mm.
I think you got to sue all of them, including
well,
the sheriff
when he comes. And this judge is the judge you've been dealing with, or is this judge that they pulled in? What happened? Because you mentioned something about a judge being pulled in from retirement.
That's
well,
this judge.
Is the same one. This is the
this is the same judge been dealing with you. Did you sue him?
Yes, indeedy. See, the other judge...
He refused to recuse himself, John.
He refused.
Yeah, but did you take him into federal court, though, for due process?
Well, that's what we have it in. We had the paperwork in for the appellate court and all. And they're all basically working together. Because I asked him, I would like you to recuse yourself. No.
Well, didn't he say to you, I see you have a case against me?
Yes, he did, and I got that yes.
And you said, yeah, and I would like you to recuse yourself.
Yourself from my case, absolutely.
Right. He said, no, I'm not going to. I'm going to take your house anyway.
Yeah, these people, they just don't stop. But now you're going through the appeal process, though?
I'm in the appellate, but now he just overthrew the appellate, the Superior
Court.
Well,
you might want to try to contact them and see what they might say. You know, I don't know if Brent is here. Maybe he's got a thought here on where to go.
But
well,
see,
but you're in the appellate of the state. You're in the state court, though, right? You're not in the federal
court,
right?
She's in the state, yeah.
I went to the, I started in the state, then I went to the federal, now I'm in the appellate. And see,
is the
now,
appellate in the federal or the appellate in the state?
The appellate is in the federal. Appellate is in the federal, isn't it? The state, that's
well,
the Supreme
well,
Court.
Well, there is an appellate system going through the federal court, but there's also the Court of Appeal, what is it, the Appellate and the Court of Appeals here in, at least in New York. There's two.
Well, the Appellate is in Hartford, and that's the federal. The Appellate's the highest in Connecticut because we have the state, we have the federal, and then we have the Appellate.
Yeah, but this is all state. You wouldn't be in the federal unless you actually moved it into the federal court. And you, and again, you could move it into the federal court for cause and then try to get an injunction. And you could do that rather quickly. You know, you're just going to have to spend a day here and a day there to get it done. But if you moved it into federal court for cause, there's no charge for that. And then you move the court in the federal, you know, for an injunction. And you'll have to read the rules on, you know, if there's a charge to move the court for an injunction. I don't think that there is, but there could be in the federal. I don't know. You know, sometimes
move
they'll charge you a fee, you know. But
move to federal court. Wait a minute. Federal court?
For cause. And the cause is not giving you due process, okay? They're doing a, you know, a non-judicial foreclosure, bypassing the system and so on, you know. So there's no due process. That's the key.
I thought you had already done that.
I did. That's on the air.
Okay.
Yeah, but I thought she did.
Well, then you got to go and do move for an injunction.
I mean, you didn't get any paperwork back from the federal court. I mean, when did you enter the federal court? How long ago?
The appellate. Well, I did at the federal court. You're right. I did. I did it at the federal court, and the federal court told me I am prohibited to file any motion against them. They're all working together.
The federal court sanctioned her, John.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah.
They said she's a serial.
oh yeah,
well,
they told me.
Then you appeal it. When did they do? How long ago did they do it?
Oh,
it had to be recently.
Yeah, it was this year.
Yeah, it was a couple months ago.
30 days or maybe 60 days. You know, it was a little confusing reading the paperwork, but you have to have a real good reason why. If you go beyond that 60-day point on why you went past that 60-day point.
Because,
but you
because
can
she
run,
doesn't
you see,
have an attorney. And she's elderly.
Well,
that's good enough.
Well, you could try that and see where you get, but you can appeal it. You have to do an appeal. First of all, it's a notice of appeal. There is a federal form. You can find that online very quickly. I don't know whether it's in the rules, but I did find a copy online. So you can file that. And then as soon as you file that, you now have 30 days to, well, actually, you got 30 days to file it, but, you know, you're going to try to bypass that. But after that, well, after you file it, you got nine months to perfect it. So you could drag your feet on that. But the problem is you got to get an injunction.
John, how could they sanction her when they haven't heard her case? She puts a case in, and then they come back and say, well, you can't file any paperwork.
Because they think they're God. They could do whatever they want. You know?
Yeah,
they're,
so they didn't even – so they're doing the same thing the lower court
is. They're trying to do that to me, you know.
They never heard the case, but they're going to make a decision based on what she told them. How do they determine that you're a serial bankruptcy person? Who determined that? Where was the hearing on it? Did you get that? You know what I'm saying?
Well, that is the point. That is the point where you never had a hearing for that to kind of a determination.
Right.
Yeah,
and see, during that, when I tried to explain, I said, what are you talking about? The times I missed it, I had 9 deaths. And those 2 court days, my brother died, my sister died, my aunt. I had, you know, they were all back to back. And I said, the judge said, okay, we are going to move your case to January. So I don't understand what you're talking about. But you keep on throwing, you filed 3 times. No, they were postponed because of death in my family.
Oh, yeah. You see, they do that. They tried that with me with my case, and it wasn't three times, you know, that I did it. But they said it
right.
was three times, you know.
And,
but,
and then
they made a rule. They tried to make a ruling on it and everything. And, yeah, they do anything they can. They're just so evil. I mean, they're just so evil. There's no other word for these people.
And like I said to them, who is the injured party? Whose life is being disrupted? I said, you know, the only thing I've been seeing since I've been coming in this court, your lives are never disrupted. You're all sitting there like it's a big score about people are having heart attacks. They're being displaced. We got over 70,000 families that have been homeless. Children are being taken from their families. You are destroying people's lives. And I said, and who is the injured party? I said, if we're not smarter than an attorney and you make the laws and break the laws, I said, where is our human rights when we own our property? When
all right, well, let me ask you, you know, did this judge make a decision that you appealed within the system, within the state also, or no?
Yes, he went right over the appellate,
okay.
Yeah.
So you are in the appellate court in the state anyway, right?
But now I guess according to them that it doesn't matter. But see, this
well,
is so
well,
criminal.
Well, if you are in the appellate court, you can go up. And those people, we found them reasonable to talk to, you know, not so bright anyway. Well, you know what? They were pretty bright. They made some good decisions, I thought, in some of the cases we heard when we were up there. But they presumed something about us, and they were dead wrong, and therefore they didn't do their job when we came up to for our turn to bat. But with that said, they've been very friendly in the appellate process, at least here in New York. Very different than going into the, you know, into the courts, the trial courts. And so if you go up there and talk with the clerk and explain the situation and ask them what you can do, she may have a form there that you can file with the court that the judge will send a note down, hey, stop. She's in appeal. Back
well,
off.
This is what happened last week. Another gentleman, I was in court for mine, and then this other gentleman, we know, they have the warranty deed to their house. And because of this MERS scan, this was a nightmare. Because of the MERS scan, this Judas Epstein, who has been robbing people and everybody, he should be under the jail. He been taking people's mortgages, again, this is the WPCA, and sell them to the bank. So the gentleman has the house and everything, warranty deed, property, owns it outright. This bank and Judas Epstein turned around and evicted the tenant. So I said, wait a minute. So we pulled the papers, and I said, look, I got to be at court at 10, and I'm like, but before this all happened, I called. It was, I guess, the beginning of the week. And I said I wanted to speak to this Russell, who he is now partners with this WPCA, which I know him because he used to work in my office. All of a sudden, he's like, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you, this and that. I said, but wait a second. There is an eviction getting ready to go on for a tenant from the bank, and the landlord is not even doing the eviction. This is criminal.
Right.
You know? So all of a sudden he started screaming at me, you know. So now here comes the sheriff. No, not the sheriff, the marshal. They go. So I get a call Thursday morning. I said, look, I'm going to run by before I go to court. Sure enough, they have the truck and everything right there. So I called. I said, let me call downtown. And I said, how on earth are they going to evict a tenant when the landlord is not doing the eviction and he owns the property, you know? So now it's getting...
Well, what happened then?
So what happened, so I had to go to court. Then when I came out, I said, you know, they go, that's right, we're going to lock your house and we're changing other. So they start unloading the apartment. So I went down there and I met the people that were being foreclosed. I said, let's go down to the city hall. You know, I said, because this is criminal what's going on. You can't
right.
do that.
Did the landlord, the owner, write a letter, write a affidavit, a letter form in an affidavit form, and give it into the court to let it be known, look, I own this property. These people don't own this property. They have no power, no authority to be deciding anything about my property. And then file it in that court?
That's what I told them to do. And I said, you know, we bought the papers. And so anyways, they want to turn around and almost have me arrested, I heard. Because I said, number one, who's in charge? So now all of a sudden, the city attorney and all this started passing the buck. And see, everybody in the city, the mayor, everybody's been a judge. I mean, an attorney. So I guess if they tried to stop the foreclosure, so they contacted this bank from Florida. And I said, wait a minute, there is not even an affidavit stamped on here. How did they become involved in this? Because it was sold to them, that MERS mortgage. So I guess there's a lot of different notoriety because everybody's like, basically, wait a minute, this is what happened to me too, you know?
Well,
let me
advise anybody, anywhere, anytime that gets into this kind of a situation, if they go into the court and they're trying to take your home away and you bring your case up that this is a non-judicial foreclosure, you don't have power, you don't have authority, you're outside the jurisdiction, all of those things, if they continue, you got to move it into federal court right away. And it's a due process thing. They're not giving you due process. You know, if these people want to take my home away from me, they think they could do it, let's go do it. And they'll never do it anyway. So, you know, let's go to court and let's do it. But, you know, this non-judicial non-judicial foreclosure.
It's called
judicial. Bypasses. You go ahead.
It's a
non-judicial.
It bypasses due process.
Right. But you know, I'll bet you they're converting a deed. That's what they do. They do an illegal
deed conversion. Well, that takes time. That takes a couple of years. You know, it takes time.
But
and maybe
see,
if there's no resistance and the people bail out, they could do it a lot quicker. I'm sure. Maybe 6 months or something. I don't know. It's just a guess in my mind. But generally speaking, they go through that process as they're battling and they're changing the ownership on your title as they're battling. And I believe in your case, you prevented them from doing that.
The way they do it quickly is if you don't claim the deed and they leave that spot blank and they put their name in there when they come after you, John. In other words, people aren't going in and finishing the warranty deed. So that spot that they're supposed to sign where they claim the deed as their own is
open. Yeah, they're
trying
to do it as an abandonment, I guess, right?
And they go in and put, that's right, and they put their name in there. See, the thing with Crystal is she already claimed the deed. She already got a warranty deed. Her name is in there. They can't put their, you see, it was very easy before because that spot was left blank, left open purposely. The banks do it purposely in case they want to foreclose. You know, then they just write whatever in there that they want. But once somebody's name is signed in there, then they actually have to forge it or fraud it or whatever they do, you know.
So where are you standing right now, Crystal?
That's what I said when I went there. I said, so how in the world are you going to sit there and take my property when I have my warranty deed, my life use for 100 years? I said the life. And I said, I have life use, warranty deed, quick claim. And I said, and it's also in my grandkids' name for 500 years, heir property. Who is going to sign my name? And the trustee, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, don't worry, we have ways we could change it. Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Look, you got to get somebody else involved here. And I think going up and talking to the clerk up at the appellate level and ask the advice on how do you go about getting an injunction, because this judge, you know, we got the appeal and he doesn't care. He keeps rolling along, you know.
Look, you,
and
you
they
and
must have
those,
a form.
All those people you're involved with this judge, You guys got to put a complaint into the judicial department, into the bar. They have a place where you put complaints in on judges, and all you should get together, because he's a retired judge. He's nothing but a lackey. And if and when you start making noise, it becomes politically uncomfortable for them. They'll get rid of him in a heartbeat if they think he's a liability. And so if they get more than one complaint, you know, if you guys all complain, but sometimes you'll get good results from that. I think you got a better chance with him because he's not a real judge. He's just somebody they took out of retirement to do their dirty work. So the minute minute he starts to get in trouble, they don't mind rolling him under the bus. So you should at least make a complaint on him because it might buy you some time. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well,
I mean, besides everything else they're doing, you know, I don't know.
Who's this, Gerard?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, do me a favor. Give me a call, too. And also, I'm trying to get everybody signed up. But what do you think about a letter and stuff from everybody who's going through this? You know, because we want to get a standard letter, notarized affidavit letter. And
everybody should file affidavits, but I'm saying put an official complaint in, all of you, on this judge to whatever department handles that. But I think, you know, got to follow John's advice and get it into the federal court. Of course, they're telling her
She's on the appellate system in the state level right now, if that's where she's at, it's already been filed. If that's the case, Crystal?
Yes, and then, but see,
okay, so
he
then
just
you
came
go
back.
See the clerk.
Right, they should have some advice for her.
Yeah, look at the courts separated. There's a separation between those courts. When you go up and talk with that clerk, it's an entirely different clerk in a system up there. You know, you're going. They have a whole different process, and you're appealing something from the lower level, and the clerk. You know, we have found very helpful on that level. I don't know. We've never had a problem up there, per se. I mean, we had a problem with the judges who didn't read our case because they presumed they understood what we were up there for, and, you know, they thought it was a big joke, but they never really understood our case. And then they found themselves with egg on their face, as a matter of fact. I think they were a little embarrassed because they were silent for a moment or two. But nevertheless, you know, I think you can get a good shake up there maybe on this case. But you got to get the injunction, or you got to get the court telling, you know, look, an injunction isn't necessary if there's an appeal in process. Nobody should be moving along on this case during an appeal.
Right. Exactly.
And so you go talk to the clerk and find out what the process is to stop this nonsense.
Can't she talk to a federal prosecutor? And telling him he needs to do
his job. She's not in the federal court right now. She's in the appeal on the state level.
No, I'm in the appellate court, the federal court, up in Hartford, Connecticut. That's the highest.
I'm at a loss then because now you're appealing the decision in the federal court.
Right. I started with this superior court, this fake court down here. Then I went to the federal court when I filed bankruptcy and all that, okay? This judge, Shay, whoever he is, I never even saw this man. He's the one who put and said, no, I cannot file, whatever. They're all family and friends together. Then I did it at the appellate court. They're all working together, it seems like.
Mm.
All three levels are working together.
All right, so you move this into the federal court. They poo-pooed it because they tried to say that you're a serial filer and stuff.
Right.
Okay, so you appealed it over to the appellate system in the federal court. You filed your paper of appeal. You have X amount of months. How long ago did you file the appeal?
The motion for the appellate court.
The notice for the appeal, how long ago?
That was done... it's in the appellate court. I did finish that the 24th of July.
Okay.
The 24th of July, and then they came back a week later. They came back.
Yeah. Did you pay the $650, the $550, that ridiculous fee?
No.
Did they ask you for it?
I know I paid quite a few different fees.
Yeah, well, to appeal in a federal court, they want a ridiculous fee. I believe it's $550. It's ridiculous.
Oh.
And, you know, I think you, I'm not sure, I was unclear on how that worked, or but whether you have time to pay it or you have to pay it when you put your notice to appeal. I don't know if Brent's still here, or maybe if he's listening in and,
well,
and knows the answer for that.
She can go in and pop horse because she's on a fixed income and stuff. She probably,
well, got to be careful because they look it. I'll bet you
they
dollars
can drag
to donuts.
Feet. Right.
I'll bet you dollars to donuts if you read through the paperwork and you go all the way to the end, you'll see that you're being denied to come in
So, yeah, and that's what I yeah.
Okay. Did
right.
they write
so
that
I,
in there? Did they that you were banned from coming in as a poor person? If you
no.
look on the end, you'll find that they probably did that. You need to
no.
If you read
but if I have to pay it,
there,
I will
fine.
Try to. If I have to pay it, I will try to get a little loan to pay it.
Yeah, but you got to make sure it's in motion. Then, if you filed it and you didn't pay it, you know the and this is I'm unclear on this, and I'm trying to find this out myself. You know, do I have to pay that fee? When I serve the notice of an appeal, or do I have the time till I perfect my case and then pay for it when I file the perfecting the case? You know, I'm not sure when they require the fee.
You mean they'll actually put it on pay in writing? You can't come in here as a poor person.
Yes. Yes,
well,
they'll do that.
You'd think every group in the nation would be railing against
yeah,
that crap.
Right, right, but they're not.
Yeah.
You know, but that's
what
they do.
You can't come here because you're poor.
Yeah, it's just like a standard. It's like a standard thing that they punch in there at the end of their papers there, and conclusion. And by the way, you know, if you're coming in as a poor person, you can't do it. So forget about it. You know, they stick it in. Oh yeah.
Say okay, I want to come in as an illegal alien. What does that do for me?
Well, they'll take you in on that then. You know.
Yeah. You gotta sneak across the border, go across the border and sneak
but I,
back.
But see, I'm
unless,
in the private,
unless,
and they don't.
Unless you have a spaceship, then you know they may not take you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just yeah, like I'm even in the private where they can't even use my name, and I have all rights reserved. You know, I got all kind of legal. You know, I am the.
Yeah, but they ignore
like,
that too. That they've been
okay.
ignoring for 10 years. All rights reserved. They've been just ignoring it.
Defense of information, okay.
Remember, they're looking at you as a 14th Amendment citizen, okay, which means that you're under civil law, and they've given your rights in cooperation with the state, and they've decided that, well, you don't need your rights. We don't need to give you your rights in this case. You know, it's crazy, but that's what they're doing. And that's why I'm very – I don't use the 14th Amendment. I don't even – claim it, you know. You got to go back to the Fifth Amendment.
Right, exactly.
There was no need okay. for a 14th Amendment.
Because at, they're not even...
There's no need for anything after the 10th, in my opinion. They don't need anything. You know, maybe changing the age to 18 for voting and, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, I thought it was a good thing because, you know, I was in the service when I, signed up to vote, and I wasn't 21 yet, but they had changed the law, so I took advantage of that, and I thought it was good, you know, so
mm-hmm.
to change it to 18 because hey, you know, don't give me a gun and tell me I got to go fight, and then tell me I can't drink or I can't vote. Don't tell me that, you know.
Right. It's just, as I said, well, oh, God.
I wonder if they got squatters' rights in Pennsylvania?
I don't think they allow squatters anywhere anymore.
No, it's still on the books.
Well, I know. I doubt you'll get it in New York. You'll not get away with that in New York, though.
See, I've determined that it's property abandoned. I'm taking it over.
And also, I saw on the news that Shelton Silver was just indicted, and he was one of the biggest part of the Ponzi schemes for this illegal foreclosure in New York. He was a former attorney general, And they guess they wanted to give him life, and all of a sudden he was begging for mercy, and all the lives he destroyed and everything else. And then they gave him 7 years. He's, what, 74 years old, so he'll get out of jail when he's 81. But they'll probably cut that time in half, you know. And so it's just like we found out another thing, too. How many attorneys are in the state of Connecticut? There's 33,000 attorneys. And we got a little small state.
It's obscene. It's obscene. We were talking, I think we brought this up last week, how many attorneys in Washington. I mean, there's more attorneys in Washington than I think population, you know. But yeah. Unbelievable.
And they only have
all
a
right,
jurist number.
We got to go. It's late, so.
Okay,
alrighty. Yeah, Gerard, when you guys get together, if I'm available, pull me in, all right?
Yeah, okay.
All right, Gerard, could you give me a call? Because I lost everybody's number and
okay.
stuff. Okay, and
And
as I said, I heard that they want to have me arrested for speaking up for the people last week. That's another thing. And
yeah, they're trying to say, yeah, they try to play the game, of course, that you don't have a license to practice law and blah.
Oh,
and
I wasn't practicing law. It was our family that's being evicted and myself.
Oh, okay. They don't stop. They don't stop. They just don't stop.
Yeah.
All right, we got to go. So.
Okay.
We're going to end
all
the call.
All right, I'll speak to you later, Gerard.
Yeah.
Thank you. And did you get that, John?
I'm sorry?
I sent something.
I got it. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to try to work on some other things here, too, to get the people.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you.
All right. God bless
you,
everyone. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And again, you know, keep in mind this project for the sheriff, and if you can give us some time working.
Yeah, I want to get into that.
Line, so.
We want to get the people into the sheriff, please.
Yeah, we gotta get them knowledge. You know, gotta give them knowledge. So if we don't,
right, that's okay.
You know, so
definitely.
Okay. Good night, everybody. We're gonna end the call. Thank you for coming.
Lead me to you. All that I ask you, show me how to find. Thank you.